gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the internet. Here in the basement of the Great Hall of Justice are the most powerful forces for good podcasting ever assembled. This is the DC Superpowers Podcast.
This looks like a job for Superman.
To the Batmobile.
My name is John Jones.
I am the Green Arrow.
Hey, super friends, welcome back to the DC Superpowers Podcast, issue number 45 for New Comic Book Day, March 1st, 2017. Hey, Vernon, it's already March.
It is. This year's just moving right on along.
Well, as always, I'm your host, Ken Rose, and sitting along with me here in the basement of the Hall of Justice is my good buddy, Vern.
Hello, everybody. How y'all doing out there?
So, Vern, we had actually some exciting stuff happen over the weekend.
We did.
Toy Fair came.
Dude, there's so many things out there, I think I might go broke if I buy all this stuff.
Yeah, that's the problem. Our buddy Cam, anytime like E3 or one of those video game shows comes out, all of a sudden he's like, okay, I have no more money. I'm done.
Yep.
Now, this is your Comic-Con, is Toy Fair.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out which ones am I going to – I got to pick now. have to pick.
Well, later on in the show
– I got money for all of them.
Later on the show, Super Friends, we're going to give a rundown of some of the big things that DC is going to be releasing, and all of the DC's licensees are going to be releasing in the next year that they unveiled at Toy Fair. And Mattel won a major award for DC toy line.
And we won that. We got it.
Yep. Also,
but all the awesome stuff and the designs for it, I'm not surprised.
Oh yeah, and it's beautiful the toys that they're going with. But also, right after that, we're also going to have our Justice League Dark review that we promised you from last week. We both sat and watched it, and well, you'll get our opinions on that here in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get into that, I think we need to go ahead and get into TV news. There was actually some good TV this week.
Yeah, it was. I want to say just, I feel like Arrow was probably going to be my favorite one. And that's surprising.
I know, that Arrow was amazing this week, I think.
Yeah, they've been doing great, I think, for like the whole, this whole new season. They've been just impressing me.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into Supergirl first, because that was first. And that was probably the close to the zaniest of the thing, because we had a visit from Mr. Mixyes Pytlick.
Yeah, and because of him, this probably was my second favorite show this week.
Well, he's one of the oldest, I don't know if you call him a villain or not, but he's one of the oldest villain-type characters I remember from DC Comics at all, because I remember watching him Saturday mornings on the Super Friends.
And I remember him from just the cartoon of Superman.
So, but we started off the show Supergirl this week, and Mixyes Pytlick decides he wants to marry Kara Zor-El. So what'd you think of that whole story idea?
I didn't mind it. I was like, how are they going to introduce him on here with her? It's usually just him and Supergirl. Or, sorry, him and Superman.
Yeah, even so in the Super Friends, it was mostly Superman that he was dealing with.
Mm-hmm. So I was like, how's he going to interact with just his cousin? And it made sense. And plus, it was a Valentine's Day episode. I was like, they're a little late on this week, but they still got in there.
Oh, yeah. Well, technically, it's the first Supergirl after Valentine's Day.
True.
But, not all the show. All the shows have been kind of like this too, off and on a little. Remember, a couple weeks ago, we actually got the Christmas episode of Legends.
Yeah, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, you guys are way behind."
Well, that one actually made sense because Legends, they did not know if they were going to have the last couple of episodes. They were initially, I think, only had like 12 episodes, but then they got renewed for the second half of their season and got to 17. So originally, if they had gone without the winter hiatus, that Christmas episode would have been basically the week before Christmas. But they decided to give him the winter hiatus with all the other shows.
Mm, okay.
So it would have landed right on time, but then the CW decided to change the schedule up a little bit.
I see.
Supergirl had dealt with basically, and anybody who doesn't know, Mr. Mixyes Pytlick basically is like a genie with no master. He can do basically anything a genie can do. And actually in the show, they said that the fifth dimension, people from the fifth dimension are very much like what the djinns and characters like that on Earth may have been based on. So it's like basically he had a couple of basic rules. He couldn't make her kill herself. He couldn't force her to fall in love. And he couldn't force her to drink orange juice. Was that all of them?
Wait, where's the orange juice one?
I don't know, but that's what he said. But the whole time he's trying to basically force her. It's like, you will, and he comes on super strong. You will want to marry me by the time this is done. And I will make you learn to love me and all of that type of stuff. So.
Yeah, and then I was just saying, there's a lot of Valentine stuff going on there for everybody else, too. The only person I did not see in this episode was Jimmy.
Yeah, there was no Jimmy. But Mon-El and Supergirl kind of moved forward on their relationship at the end of this. But
yeah, they did. And he was jealous in this whole episode.
But I do like the fact that they actually they wrote his character so that he actually realized that's what's going on. And it allowed him to grow a little bit, you know? And realize that, hey, I don't have to save her all the time. She can save herself. So.
Which I thought was real cool, though, too, because Mon-El, being what he was, and he also knew the trick how to get him back to his universe.
Oh, yeah. He's the only one that knew that if you get him to say his name backwards, he will go back home.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't tell everybody right away.
No, he didn't.
So, yeah, but they
figured
out.
For a while, and that's why I think also got her a little mad. She's like, you didn't tell me? This at the beginning of all this? He's like, no, because we used to just kill him.
Exactly. He said on Daxum they used to just kill him. Don't even worry about it.
Yeah, which honestly is a easier solution, but, you know, Supergirl having the ass on her chest, you can't do that.
Yeah. Well, what'd you think of the I really loved the fight in the fortress at the end. She tricks Mixoplex, or Mixoplex is the way they say it's supposed to be pronounced now. But they trick him to going to the fortress to marry her, and then she locks him in the fortress and sets it to self-destruct.
Yep. And he's like, no, don't kill yourself.
And so in order to stop it, she gives him the cancellation code that he types into the computer, which basically means he wrote these letters down in Kryptonian, not knowing that they were also his name spelled backwards. Earlier in the show, they had established from John Jones that for some cultures, writing something down is the true way of saying something.
Yeah.
So that it actually worked that he wrote down his name backwards, which is the way he says his name backwards.
And
which is an interesting way to
right?
go.
Very interesting way to go. I was like, I didn't know which way we were going to go, but I should have picked up on that when they first said in some places we just write our name down for formal communication. So I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm. So she gets rid of Mixias Pitalik. Maggie, the B storyline in it was basically Maggie and, Supergirl's sister. Drawing a blank.
I'm trying to help you. Maggie and...
Danvers. And yeah, everybody's going to be screaming at their iPods and phones and stuff. But they ended up learning that Maggie really doesn't like Valentine's Day.
But she hates Matt. Yeah.
Exactly. But she learns
Alex.
Alex, yes. But Alex loves Valentine's Day, and she's never really had a Valentine's Day. So they learn. Maggie learns to basically accept the Valentine's Day and know that you got to make compromises sometimes when you're in a really meaningful relationship.
Yeah. And once you found out her backstory, I can see why I was still on Alex. So I was like, hey, if you're dating somebody, you should probably tell them about all this before.
Yeah.
That's something you probably want to tell them before. If anybody, you tell somebody something like that. So.
And the other one is Wynn found himself a girlfriend.
Yeah, she's not from this world.
Yeah, she's from out of this world. Starhaven is where she's supposed to be from, which is actually, from what I've heard, Starhaven actually has ties to the Legion. A couple Legion characters were actually from there in the 31st century. Which I have another 31st century reference coming up in another show.
Okay.
Yeah, Legion's been getting a lot of love in the comics and in TV this week. And little references here and there. But Supergirl.
According to the show, I had a little idea from a book that we got to read next week.
Which one? What one?
Arrow. They're supposed to have Roy Harper come back in the comic books with him and Arrow meeting up. So I'm thinking some point in the show, we're probably going to see him and Roy meet up again.
Yeah. I don't know if Colton Haynes is coming back this season or not. It'd be nice if he did.
It would be.
So,
But
moving on to The Flash on Earth 2 in Gorilla City.
Now, this is one we've been waiting for a while. This whole season we've been waiting to see the Planet of the Apes episode of Flash.
Exactly.
But, yes, this one was a great one. We had everybody in this one. We even got a return of Harrison Wells of Earth 2.
Yes. And so there was a time when we see Harrison and H.G. Wells together.
Yep, in the same room, which was awesome.
Oh, yeah, that was great. But what did you think of the actual CG and all the stuff with in Gorilla City?
I mean, it was TBCG, so you couldn't really hate on it. It was basically how they did Killer Shark. What was that, Killer Shark?
Well, see, that stuff kind of works, but the ones I kind of had, it was okay but not great, was when they were actually like in the arena, when they're in completely CG area.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one I noticed. I'm like, eh.
It didn't fit quite right.
Budget,
But yeah, for the budget they were using, this looked good. I mean, this was Gorilla City. Next week, I think it's going to be a lot better because they're just putting apes in the real city.
Yeah, I did think in some points it did look better than it was in the first season with Gorilla Grodd.
Yeah.
And some you could tell it was definitely maybe a little bit too much CGI, but I didn't mind that.
It started to get a little video gamey a little bit when they were doing the actual fight scenes in the arena.
Yeah.
But the rest of it looked awesome, and the story was great.
They fixed Flash CGI because when he was in the first season, some of the CGI he was in just looked to be looked terrible.
Yeah.
So they've improved on that, which I'll take that, and that was great. There was one thing that I really loved about this show, though. You got to see Julian become more of a teammate, and you can definitely tell him and Caitlin are trying to get a little bit more involved.
Oh, yeah. That one, and it's good. So that's going to crush him when Julian actually becomes Savitar again.
Yeah, or she becomes Killer Frost, which in this case, she might not become Killer Frost because of Julian.
I don't know. Depends. Because remember, it depends on how much they change the future.
Yeah.
Because Killer Frost is supposed to be on the loose. Gorillas are supposed to attack Central City. We know they do attack next week.
Mm-hmm. With the help of someone that Cisco has feelings for.
Yeah. Since when is Gypsy working with the Gorillas on Earth 2?
Yeah, that's the thing that got me at that. I'm like, is she being brainwashed? Does she really have an evil agenda? What's going on here?
I don't
know. Why is she? Yeah. Now this was the Earth 2 Gypsy, right?
No, I don't know. Yeah. This may be the Earth. What is Harrison from Earth 19?
Yeah.
Yeah. H.R. Wells is from Earth 19, so this could be the Earth 19 Gypsy.
We'll find out. That's the thing that threw me off. I mean, either way, she. Yeah, it's probably the Earth 19 because on Earth 2, it seems like everybody they're not themselves. No matter what Earth they're in, they're different. So that had to be the one 19.
Well, also, if you look at it from the point of view, is Vicky was even saying, and we've said also that how it looks like Gypsy may be actually the Earth 19 doppelganger for Cisco.
Right.
She's got all the same powers and such. So right. If she is, we already saw the Earth 2 doppelganger for Cisco. Remember, he was in last season?
He was actually
the evil Cisco was
on. Yeah, well, he wasn't Vibe. He was Reverb, right?
Something like that. I don't remember exactly what he was called.
But yeah, that he had the full potential powers of what Gypsy has. Exactly. Cisco himself still trying to get
to that. Well, so does Cisco now. After that fight with Gypsy, he's got the powers.
Yeah, he's got the powers, but Reverb was, oof. That dude was how I pictured him from the comic books and more from what they put in the show.
Yeah.
What else? I'm trying to think. What was the other good top? Oh, of course. We got Jesse Quick back on the show.
Oh, yeah. Jesse and Wally start to rekindle their romance, kind of, sort of. Although she's very reluctant at the beginning.
Yeah, by the end of it, everything went good.
Oh, yeah.
But at the beginning, she's like, oh, yeah, you don't call me. You don't do this. You've got powers now? Oh, that makes sense. Well, as you said, you feel perfect now that you have your powers. He always wanted to be a speedster. Mm-hmm. And when they were saving the day from the robbers, once the crowd came out and started admiring Kid Flash, he's like, oh, my goodness, this is you. So you're not just like doing this because you like powers or like me because I had speed. You've been wanting to do this your whole life.
Yeah. So, but also, actually, the other one I wanted to ask you about was, I had forgotten the way Gorilla City works with Solovar and Grodd and all those.
It's been like every incarnation.
Well, I fell for that, when it first happened, that with, I totally believed when Grodd's like, Solovar wants to attack Earth and all this stuff, and I was thinking, wait a minute, this doesn't feel right that Grodd's telling them this. But then, later you find out, I was like, oh yeah, Solovar was actually a good gorilla, if I remember right, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was fine with just leaving the gorillas where they are and being happy staying there.
Right. The first time I ever seen him was in the Super Friends, and he was the same way. He's like, oh, I'm probably gonna watch later tonight. he's like, you humans are in here, and I don't want you here. But they're like, oh, we come in peace. They're like, oh, you're fine. Grodd, we gotta get rid of him because he doesn't follow my rules. And then Justice League Unlimited, he was that whole episode trying to get rid of Grodd.
Yeah.
And it's like that in every incarnation of it. So when Grodd was saying he wants to do this and he wants to do that, I'm like, wait a minute. Grodd's sounding like the victim here. Grodd is never the victim.
Yeah. Well, we do find out that with the Flash's help, he basically takes over Gorilla City from Solovar.
Yep.
And next week, the gorillas invade Earth 1's Central City.
Just as the news predicted.
Exactly. So it looks like they're not changing much in the way of the future news.
Yeah, but the big twist at the end was Jesse. The story that Jesse's gonna probably stay with Wally on Earth 1. I think that's gonna happen because even in the show they said she's gonna appear more in the more episodes. So this makes perfect sense why I said that.
We're building the Flash family.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what's gonna happen to Wells though. Is he gonna die? Is he just gonna go back home happily?
I don't know. What's the chances, though, that Wally, at the end of the season, decides to go to Earth 2?
That could be another possibility. That could work, too. It could, but I doubt because of how many things. I don't know. It could, but I doubt it. Like they said, they're going to show more of her on the show, so she'll probably stay. Okay. Now, by the end of all this, he may go back, but for at least the rest of the season, he's going to be on Earth 1.
Okay. Well, let's move on to Legends of Tomorrow. Now, did you ever read Camelot 3000 back in the 80s?
No, I did not.
I know it was a series that DC did. It didn't go a really long time, I don't think. But it was basically the Knights in Camelot, which is basically what this was based on, because we went back to Camelot. But before we did, in Legends, we go to the future, the year 3000 in Detroit. Now, do you know the significance of the year 3000?
Isn't that where... Oh, no. No, I don't. No.
Well, that's the 31st century.
Okay, so that is where the Legion is.
The
okay.
Legion should be the similar or the same world or within a couple of years of where the Legion's at. I don't know exactly when the Legion happens, but I know it's the 31st century.
Okay, that's why I was a little. I didn't want to say I completely knew because I wasn't for sure, but my brain was telling me they might have some type of tie in there.
Yeah, but they're based in Metropolis, aren't they?
Yes.
Okay, so we go to Detroit, and we find out that Rip goes to the 31st century. To find a piece of the spear that he left with Dr. Midnight of the Justice Society. He had taken Dr. Midnight to the future, and he was protecting a piece of the spear.
Oh, okay. And because when they first showed him, I'm like, who the heck is this guy? And he said, oh, you must have fixed your blindness. I'm still like, who the heck is this guy? Because he had a mask on and goggles. I didn't see him outside of that.
Uh-huh.
I seen a bald dude. Like, who is he?
I didn't put it together with that until Vixen says that's Dr. Midnight. She said that's Charles.
Yeah,
I didn't get it there either.
Yeah. I got it when you said that, so I'm like, okay, he was blind because, you know, Dr. Midnight.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I thought it was pretty funny how when they got there and he wrote RIP in the blood and he's like, man, rest in peace. He's like, nope, that's Rip's name. He's telling you who killed him. And this is also why you don't have relationships with your teammates. You've seen a little bit of tension between Citizen Steel and Vixen at the very beginning. I'm glad they didn't play on that too much. I didn't want them... making this a complete love story, but I was glad they showed a little glimpse of that.
Yeah, it seems like all three or all four shows, the only one that keeps any angst at all sometimes would be Arrow. All the rest of them, they get through it pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And Arrow tends to get through it pretty quick, too.
Now it is. Like I said, last season they kind of stayed with it, but yeah, they're going through it pretty quick. And Flash is the one that usually keeps that going now.
A little bit. But not much. They try not to base the whole show on it.
Yeah.
So, but they find out that Rip got one piece of the spear back, and later on we find out the spear was broken into four pieces.
Yeah,
so he's got two of the pieces now.
There was also a little bit of animosity between White Canary and Vixen.
Oh, yeah, because of they realized that Vixen blames her and says straight up, if you had killed Rip back in 1776 with the George Washington episode, he would not have come up and killed Dr. Midnight.
Yep. Well, she wasn't wrong. I agree with her.
Yeah, and the Legion of Doom would not have been able to find the pieces of the spear because it's Rip remembering where he put them that they're actually able to do find it now.
Yeah.
So we go from the far future of the year 3000 in Detroit to ancient England in, what was it, 5 or 800 AD?
I can't remember how far it was back there.
It was somewhere around like 5 or 800 AD. Because then Nate was talking about how he's a historian. He didn't like the future because he doesn't know what's going to go on. He doesn't know how to do anything. But this part of history, he knows history.
He thought he did. He was wrong on a couple of things.
Well, no, he wasn't wrong. It had been changed.
Okay.
Because we find out Ray has been a huge fan of the Knights of Camelot since he was a little kid.
Since he was a kid, yeah.
And then... the costumes and stuff that they come up with to walk and to try to find the spear piece look like they were going, as Nate tells them, they look like they're going to a Renaissance festival.
Mm-hmm. He's not the only one that's historically dressed correctly.
Exactly. And everybody thought he looked like a leper. So, but they're walking through the woods, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, all these knights in shining armor, I mean, traditional cliche knights in shining armor pop out of the woods and make them stop. At which point, after they're stopped, Ray says, oh, I got this. And he starts speaking in what we would think of as Arthurian speech, like, hark, take us to yon Camelot. And everybody's like, wait a minute, why are you asking them about Camelot and Arthur? And then he goes, look at their shields. They have the crest of King Arthur on their shields.
Right.
So, and this was, and it was the Crest of Arthur and all this that should not exist at all. And Nate's sitting here like, wait a minute, this isn't right. Arthur was never real. And then they get to the castle. They meet King Arthur, and he has the round table with the knights around the round table. And the whole thing about the Black Knight has been hunting the knights and all these things. And Nate is sitting there like, those are all legends based on things here and there. That's not real.
Yeah.
And then
he's still got that mindset of, I'm the historian, everything should be correct.
Something's not right here.
Messing up stuff to lure you guys there anyway.
So they, now they were told by Gideon that there was a piece of the spear. They're using the compass attached to Gideon. And one of the pieces should be here in this time frame. Well, I mean, as they walk in, they even have the sword is in the stone behind Arthur and the rest of them up on the dais. I mean, that's how cliche
this is.
The
whole time. Yeah.
Well, Arthur asked Merlin to come in to vet out these intruders and make sure that they're okay people. And Merlin walks in, and she lowers her hood.
Yeah, she. Merlin, she.
Turns out Merlin is Stargirl.
I was not expecting that.
Well, then we find out after commercial break that the whole thing is Rip. Back when we had found out earlier in the season that the elite or the society, Rip had found them in the 50s when they had decided to all disband to go on some mission that they never came back from. Rip had taken the society. They broke the spear into pieces, and three of the members of the society of the Justice Society of America had taken them to three different time periods.
Yep.
So that it's that much harder to put the spear back together.
And I think he used all this as a plan for, hey, if anything bad happens, they'll be in a safe place, right?
Mm. Exactly. So she has one of the pieces, and she had been dropped off back at this time in England, and so she had fashioned this time and basically created the Camelot that she had heard about. That's why there is a Camelot back at this time, with Guinevere and Arthur and Galahad and all of them. And like we said, this is the show where they can basically do anything and just say, hey, this is a superhero show to have fun. They have the Black Knight is now Damian Dark. And they've got tech from the year 3000 that allows Rip to control the all of Arthur and his knights, because they're going to attack Camelot unless the Camelot gives up their piece of the spear.
Well, it wasn't a bad idea, of course, on their part. But like I said, there have been so many parts in this sure, I would have just probably killed Rip myself. I'm like, this dude's a little too dangerous right now.
Yeah. Well, they go to the big battle, and Ray has decided, you know what? I've always wanted to be a knight in shining armor and stuff, so I'm going to fight with him. And he has the armor build up, and he's taken part of his Adam suit, set it to his glove, so he has Sir Galahad had been killed by Arthur. He grabs Galahad's sword and ionizes the sword so it starts glowing. And the armorer behind us, it's a saber of light.
And they're like, don't call it a lightsaber because you can get copyright issues.
That's right. So basically, copyright Ray runs around with a lightsaber.
I thought that was awesome. That's probably my favorite part of the whole show. Like, we got a Star Wars episode, but when you have something like this, you can't pass it up. You got to put it in there.
We've had multiple Star Wars references in this season. Remember, we had a whole episode with George Lucas.
Right.
So,
and you also seen the reason why Stargirl wants to stay in Camelot too is because she fell in love too.
Exactly, she fell in love with Arthur, which is sad because she has Arthur has Guinevere.
Right. Which after this episode went off, she might be free with him.
I was actually wondering: did Arthur die in the battle or something? Because
you know what, I didn't think he did.
I didn't think so either, but...
No, he didn't, because he went to go charge in because he called Damian Dark a sorcerer.
Yeah, but they had to, in the very end of it, you get Guinevere's in the tent with Sarah Lance a lot.
A lot, too, yeah. And you get...
Ray interrupts them.
Yep, and then he's like, oh, I'm sorry, and then as they walk out, he tells Sarah, didn't he say every, what was his quote?
Every good story
every
ends
story
with a kiss.
Ends with a good kiss, or every good story ends with a kiss.
Is it me back. Or is every queen that they come across, Sarah's got to start making out with her?
Hey, you know she's got to leave her mark somewhere in history.
Remember the French queen from the beginning?
I remember that. Now that was really intense.
So,
but now it's like, hey,
they got the piece.
Once she took off her mask at the beginning of the show, I knew that was going to happen in there somewhere.
Yeah. But the Legends get their piece of the spear. Now it's up to the Legion of Doom has two pieces. The Legends have one. What episode number was this? Do you know?
I do not know.
Give me a minute. I'll look it up. There's only 17 episodes this season. We're getting close to the end.
And I was going to say, before they even did all that, they captured Rip.
Yes, they did. Well, talk about how did they figure out how to break the mind control over the Knights. That was actually pretty cool.
Oh, my goodness. The most funniest way. So there's this mind control that Rip stole technology from Dr. Midnight. So once he stole that technology, it was still laying on the floor, some of it. So Stein sees it, steals it himself, and then you get Heatwave in there talking to him saying, "Did you steal this? I can smell a thief when I see one." Gets in his face and tell him, "I know you took something." He shows it to him. Stein says, "I prefer the word borrow." So they're tinkering this thing. They're messing with this thing for the whole episode. And a great mind must possess this thing to actually have it work on other people to take mind control over everybody. So Stein's like, "I'm the perfect guy for the job. I'm the smartest guy on the ship." Nothing works at all. Mick tries it out. He gets Stein to get under his control. So it turns out Mick has a better mind than Stein.
Well, what it is they said it's not the amount of mental power or the strongest
mind.
It's
how dark his mind
is. It's how intense you can be. And Rick, there's not very many people more intense than Mick Rory.
But see, as Mick was saying, just face it, my mind's better than yours. I was like, you know what? I'll admit that to him. I'm a Mick fan. I'll let him have that.
But they
So, yeah, he's the reason why they really defeat everybody with Camelot. Because Rip, I'm sorry, not Rip. Rory was able to get the device on his head and control everybody and get them off of the mind control that, was it Rip that was controlling or was it Damien? It was Rip, wasn't it?
Rip was doing it. Rip Hunter had the headpiece on.
So, yeah, his was basically crap after the end of that because, hey, Mick's mind even stronger than his.
That's right. Basically, Mick sent so many strong emotions and all these things through the headset that it overloaded all the receivers.
And did you hear what he said before that started happening?
Uh-uh.
I think he went back to his childhood. That's just what I was speculating at because before he did all this, he was like that poor boy. And it's like he just focused on that the whole time.
Okay.
So I'm thinking it's probably from his childhood that was so dark and twisted that made everybody else no one could overcome that.
So, but that turned the tide in the war, and all of a sudden, all that's left on the bad guy side is Damien Dark and Rip Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And Rip Hunter got his horse taken out, so he's laying on the ground, and Damien looks at him and says, "Well, I don't do rescues. You're on your own." And takes off.
It's like, wow.
So they were able to catch Rip. Yeah, this was episode 12, and there are 17 episodes in the season, so we've only got. Five more episodes.
What was going to happen with Rip? Are they going to get him back? Because by the end of all this, Gideon still's listening to him. While he's in his little prison cell, he says Gideon's name. She says, "Yes, Captain." And he said, "I always know you're there for me." And it goes off. So he's getting out next week.
More than likely. So, and the last one we have is, why don't you tell everybody what happened on Arrow this week? Arrow had some interesting stuff happening.
A lot of interesting things happening.
I'm liking the second half of the season so far. It has a lot more of Mare Queen having to do things because the Arrow just can't do it.
Yeah, that's what I'm loving about this whole thing. It's like, hey, he's going to have to be his human, well, not human self. He's going to have to be his mayor self, and Arrow won't always be able to do everything. But he's also, because he's such a big figure now, he was always rich and in the spotlight, but now since he's running the city, cameras are on him daily. Mike is in his face all the time. There's certain things that he crosses the line between being Oliver Queen and Green Arrow. And from this episode, people are beginning to pick up on that more and more each episode. So I can't remember the girl that had all this set up, but her, Cupid, and what's her name?
Oh, it's Cupid, China White.
Oh, man. China White, she's a new character for
the
show.
The black cop from earlier in this season.
The one that had
beef
with...
She was the dirty cop.
Yeah, she had beef with the captain. But
yeah.
I can't think of her name.
Well, Deputy
America
now.
Them to me, they felt like Star City Sirens, honestly.
That's exactly what I was thinking, too. It's like, wow, now they have their version of Sirens.
Now, as I said, every episode you're going to get a little bit of Batman touched in there somewhere, Feral. But I'm still liking this season a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways... They break out of jail, not even jail, they broke off the bus that was taking them to another jail. They kill the guards and get out. now that's a big thing that's going on in the city. But you also have all these problems and his demons coming out from his past and what's going on with him as mayor. Prometheus is still trying to gnaw his neck. So at the beginning of the show, you get him and Diggle going to Prometheus' mother's house. And they're trying to tell her, hey, your son's a criminal. He's evil. He's killed all these people. She doesn't want to hear it.
She already
doesn't
knows.
Care. Yeah, she just doesn't care. She's like, I'm not letting my son go to jail. I'm not going to let you guys either kill him or put him behind bars. So she's no help at all, which you would think, even being your son, if he's doing this mass murder spree, he should probably be locked up. But
well, also, did you hear what they said later on where she was at? She was actually in Opal City. So they've mentioned Opal City a couple times this season.
Do you think we're going to get anything from Question soon?
I don't know. We've seen it wasn't Montoya's over on Gotham. So
right,
I don't know. It
right.
could be the original question if we do
it. It has to be. That's what everybody's been speculating. And even the creator said they would be interested in doing that, but it would not be this season. But since they're interested, we'll probably get him next season. Or
yeah.
More
well, we got
likely
another, if I remember right, was it on Arrow that, or was it Arrow or Flash that we got a Bloodhaven reference again?
That was Arrow.
Yeah, because someone was in Bloodhaven, or had come from Bloodhaven.
Yeah, any hero that has, or any hero in DC Comics is more like a vigilante or someone that doesn't have any powers, they're going to be referenced on Arrow, seems like. I mean,
yeah.
Even the Peg Horde Blue Beetle, he didn't have any powers. He was a reference on there for a couple episodes in the last couple seasons.
Yeah, there's a couple times they've mentioned Cord Industries and stuff.
Yep. But, so they go there, and she's no help. So Prometheus also strikes again. He tells the new chief at the police station?
Yeah, the new police captain, Pike.
He gives him a tip saying, hey, Green Arrow was the one that killed your... what's the guy's name? Felicity's ex. Dead
yeah,
ex.
Yeah,
Murph? No?
No. No, keep going. I'll remember it.
It began with him, I think. But yeah, his arrow was the one that impaled him, and they got some records back from the doctor's autopsy. And that's when he goes in and you have to talk. They are all talking to the mayor now saying, hey, lighten up. Arrow really didn't do this. And that was a little suspicious in my opinion. It was like, you guys are telling him you're the Arrow, really. But he's saying, lighten up on him. He really didn't do his Prometheus and he's a crazy maniac. And you got to think, he saved the city so many times. Why would he go do this? He's like, well, his arrow was in his body, so we're going to go after him. And that's what messes them up when they're trying to capture the new sirens, or I'm going to call them, from. And they get away because the cops are trying to arrest the Green Arrow for that murder, which he really didn't mean to commit. And as the show goes by, you also get Ollie's new girlfriend. She finds out, well, she's just basically on the right track. He is the Green Arrow. She goes to confront him jokingly. And he's like, yeah, I am. I'm just playing. No, I'm not. I thought you were joking. So then that goes off with him telling Thea and Felicity, and they go to take this matter into their own hands. So to protect Ollie, Thea tells Felicity, hack her computer, put out all this information. She's been doing some dirty stuff to get her information. And once her business finds out, they fire her. And she's really heartbroken over this. I mean, I felt bad for her. She didn't deserve all of that. Her job and her life is really gone now because Thea told Felicity to hack into that and do whatever you can to make her look bad so Ollie doesn't get out it. As the Green Arrow.
Well, yeah, it made it look like she's been plagiarizing other articles for the last couple of years for all of her
right.
stories.
Which I don't think she has.
She no, she hasn't. Like that was all planted by Felicity.
At first I was like, did she actually do that? And they just found the dirt on her, but...
And
okay.
The cop that they had said that Arrow actually killed, the cop that Arrow killed was Billy Malone.
Billy Malone. I knew it was an M in there somewhere.
Yeah.
So, and that's the biggest thing about the whole conflict is Malone. Then you get Mayor Queen going to the captain, one-on-one, he said, I already heard about all this stuff you told me about Arrow that you didn't do it, but I want to hear. He said, well, listen to me. I'm the mayor. I know the Green Arrow didn't do it. I have contact with him. He's like, why? Well, I'm the mayor. I think it's good to know everybody in your city that's helping, and he knows the Arrow's helping them. He said, why would he take out Dark and been doing all this good deeds to just kill one cop? Doesn't that sound a little strange? Wouldn't you think maybe there's someone else like Prometheus that's a maniac leading us on the run all these months? So he thinks about that, and he says, thanks for talking to me. I'll give it some thought. And Ollie has faith in people, so he's figuring in his head he'll probably help them out by the end of all this. So you get Team Arrow. Oh, by the way, Curtis has a new outfit.
Yeah.
Update
he got
now.
The jacket, finally.
He got the jacket. He got the knee pads. A little bit of new color in there. Got some new boots. He looks more like Mr. Terrific. So
I would just still need to see the T-balls.
I'm waiting for that. And it was weird because by the end of the episode, you got Felicity gave the mask to the new Black Canary. I mean, she's not called the new Black Canary yet, but gave it to Dinah. And she's saying, why are you doing this? I don't want to take up her mantle yet. I don't want to feel, make anybody feel disrespected. And as, what'd she say? I don't want to step in her shoes. Felicity says, you're not in her shoes. This is a mask.
That's right.
But by the end of the episode, I was noticing everybody has some type of weapon. But Mr. Terrific. I'm like, you really need to get those T-balls.
You know how great it was to see Canary with the Canary's Cry?
Oh my God. I'm like, I've been waiting for that literally since Arrow started. I'm like, when are we going to get Black Canary with the actual cry? When we got Laurel with the fake cry, I'm like, that'll work for now. That's, you know, giving me a little something. But this is perfect. Even when she was fighting, which one was she going at in here?
She was fighting Cupid. No, she wasn't fighting Cupid, was she? No, she was fighting China White.
Oh, that's who it was. Well, she was going at China White. She had her down, but Canary just screams right in her face and flies her right in the air. I'm like, yep, that's what Canary Cry would do to you.
Yep.
But by the end of all this, they're going at it, and then the new sirens come in with their gang saying it's funny how money gives people all this support and all this, all these liabilities. And they go in there and they start shooting. Then you get the cops come in there with the choppers and the guns. They start going at it. And China White tells Ollie, or Green Arrow, I can't wait till I see them take you down. Just as she says that, the captain shoots her and takes her down. I'm like, well, that's karma for you.
Mm-hmm.
So Ollie was right by talking to him, showing him more of a human side without his mask. It works once again like it did in the last episode. You don't always have to be Green Arrow to do good. And he lets him go, and he also told the captain, I'm sorry about what I did, but I'm going to have to live that for the rest of my life. And the cop says, huh, that's funny. The mayor told me the same exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
So just little things like that is showing me this probably going to out him as the Green Arrow eventually. And by the end of this whole episode, Prometheus did to them once again, or somebody did. They were saying how the Green Arrow is the reason why I keep wanting to say Murphy. You just told me
Billy Malone.
What happened to him? And that's being all spread over the news. And now he's like, oh, crap. I might not be mayor for much longer.
Exactly. But it was a great episode. It was great seeing Canary. You also see at the end that Quentin Lance, Caesar doing it, says, well, she has to have a code name. So Ollie checks it with him straight up. We were thinking about Black Canary. And he says straight up that there would be no better person for it. He knows that Laurel wanted someone else to take up that mantle and move on with it. And that's what he tells her. It's like, you're not trying to fill her shoes. You take that name, you're basically just moving the name forward.
Right. So she felt good. I think she's probably going to use that whole costume, honestly, because when I seen her in just the jacket and the jeans, I'm like, that looks a little off. But she's stepping into the shoes of the new Canary. And as he said,
we may see the fishnets.
Oh, that would be awesome. Don't do that to me. Don't do that to me. That's too much fanboy right there. I don't know if they'll know that close, but if they did, that would be awesome.
So this week was a hard one to call on, which was the best show, because you got Missy S. Pidlick, Gorilla City, Camelot 3000, and then Arrow, all new stuff on there.
Yeah. So
All the shows are hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a toss-up. I'll just say all of them. Like I said, my favorite show, just because how well this improved to me, is Arrow. But still, if I couldn't give you a big pick of which one's the best one. All of them hit the mark this week.
Yeah, this is one of the most solid episodes we've had this season, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. But all shows get two thumbs up for me.
So, but before we move out of TV too far, because we're moving into, it's time to move into news, we actually have some Vixen news.
Yeah, I didn't know about this till you said it. Vixen's getting her DVD release.
Exactly. They're releasing what they're called the Vixen the Movie in May to DVD and Blu-ray. And what it is, they're taking the actual animated series, the two seasons that have been on CW Seed, putting them on a Blu-ray together, mixed together as one movie. And it's also going to be packaged with two episodes of Justice League Unlimited that featured Vixen. Also on there, I believe they said, the press release says that from executive producers Greg Berlanti, Mark Guggenheim, and Andrew Kreisberg, Warner Home Entertainment brings you the animated feature Vixen the Movie on digital HD on May 8th. And on Blu-ray, including the digital HD copy, and DVD on May 23rd. The Vixen the Movie is priced to own at $20, or it's $19.98, for the Blu-ray, and only $18.94 for the DVD. So you might as well just get the Blu-ray. Now, it's just the movie actually combines the first two seasons of the digital series into a single uniform story and includes 15 minutes of all new content to go with it. Probably something to bridge the gap in the two series.
And I'm glad that they're bringing that out actual to a physical copy, because as I said, I was talking to some guys in the comic book store. They didn't even know about the CW seat at all.
Mm-hmm.
They heard about there was a Vixen show, but they said they couldn't find it really anywhere from on they knew it was on a streaming service, so they didn't see it on Netflix. They didn't see it on Hulu. So they said maybe I was lied to. It was a rumor that was going around. But I'm glad this is coming out now. So for people that don't have the streaming service with the CW seat or have the best internet connection, they can just buy it and watch it at home.
Exactly. Well, this also comes with a new featurette, it says, and then the episodes of JLU. Then the rest of this is basically just describing what the show series is, which we've talked about on here. This actually has all the voices of the actual characters from the TV series. So it's got Stephen Amell, Grant Gustin, Emily Bett Rickards, Carlos Valdez, Katie Cassidy, Victor Garber, and Franz Drama, which is Jax. So Firestorm's in it, the Atom's in it, all of these characters were in the series somewhere.
And I still haven't watched the new season of Vixen, so I might as well just wait till this comes out.
That's pretty good. Once you put it all together, it's only about 20 minutes or two and a half hours to watch the whole thing.
Right.
So with the extra 15 minutes, it probably puts this whole movie at about 60 minutes.
Yeah, me and my mother were watching the whole 5-minute clips last season. We were just watching them each week. So this will be good.
And this next story actually came out today. Today's Thursday. As of today, this afternoon at noon is the next story we have. We're moving into movie news. I know this one just caught you by surprise.
It did. Because I knew about the Batman stuff, but this one was, I had no idea about this
Well, Hollywood Reporter picked this up. That Chris McKay, who was the director of the Lego Batman movie, has actually been hired to direct a Dick Grayson Nightwing movie. Now, this is being written by Bill DeBoo, who did The Accountant.
Yeah.
He's writing
Which
the script.
Makes sense.
We don't know anything else about it, so we know it's a Nightwing movie. And we know the director and the writer, and that's it.
Yeah, there's really not much out there, and the article really just goes on for, I guess, people that don't really know too much about which Robin this actually is or who Nightwing is. I go back about when he was created, when he was with the Flying Graysons, Teen Titans, the Nightwing. Stuff we all know.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact they're making a movie, and I think they've been talking about making a Nightwing movie was since I started first going to Akron U, and that was like in 2011.
Well, they about possibly doing I know for a while TNT was developing a Teen Titans series. Or a Titans series with Nightwing.
Now, I don't know how true this is or if I'm just going off of something I thought I heard. I think they were thinking about making that back when they had what was the guy's name? The one for the Batman Robin films? Chris, what's his name? Well, the Batman Robin movies.
I know who you're talking about.
Chris O'Donnell.
Yes.
When he was Robin, they were thinking about maybe making a Nightwing movie then.
Yeah,
so,
but Batman and Robin kind of tanked a little bit for him.
Yeah, they did. I'm just saying, they've been thinking about making a Nightwing movie for years, about 20-plus years now.
Well, the one thing that they did do was wrap up the idea of what movies are running around right now. It says, the Nightwing project joins Warner Brothers' growing DC Extended Universe as the studio focuses on mining some of DC's most beloved characters in new films. As an example, they got Gotham City Sirens with David Ayer attached to direct is going to focus on the female villains of the universe, including Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn. The next actual films to hit theaters, which this is the first time I've seen it written down anywhere that The Flash is not actually – they moved the date. Because originally The Flash was supposed to be March of next year, but they're not on the list now with a date.
Good.
But it says the next films to hit the theaters include Wonder Woman on June 2nd, Justice League on November 17th, Aquaman on October 5th of next year in 2018.
I'm really hyped for that one. Oh, man.
Then it says there is also still a sequel to Suicide Squad, the Batman starring Ben Affleck, which we'll get to here in a minute, a Shazam film, a Flash film, and a Cyborg project in the works. So those are the ones that are totally confirmed that that Hollywood Reporter is saying these ones are still on the table right now.
I'm glad that it took a Flash off, because until they get that whole director thing set
out.
Yeah,
they don't know when they're going to get the Flash one up and running.
When they said they're still trying to pump it out, I'm like, oh, no, that's not going to be good for Flash. And I really like Flash. Don't screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole Nightwing movie coming out, I'm happy for it. If it does, I just hope they pay tribute right for it, throw in some of his Teen Titans references, throw in the Batman stuff. This can be done well, like with any movie. If you do it right, it'll come out good and people will love it. So I got hopes for this.
I'll kill her!
Ah, wait, stop.
Believe me, I'll do it!
I love ads.
I don't know why that would have been perfect if we're talking about Nightwing.
Yeah. Well, actually, that was a scene out of Batman v Superman. That was the guy threatening Martha Kent.
Do not edit that one out. Leave that in there. That was too perfect. I'll kill her!
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, the next one actually is talking about the Batman.
The Batman, right.
Go ahead on that one, man.
If I can get my cursor to go over to it. Okay, so everything we were talking about a couple weeks ago about Matt Reeves maybe doing the Batman movie, which I kind of figure he more than likely would. It seemed to be something that was not just a rumor. It seemed to be pretty confirmed since he did meet with them.
Yeah, but then last week they were saying that he basically walked away from the table. He was done. He wasn't going to do it.
Yeah, but I don't know. With all these rumors going around with the Batman thing, if some articles actually say they met up, they're probably going to do so. And if he walked away, they said the same thing for Ben Affleck, just stepping away from the movies completely. But he's not. He just stepped down as director.
Exactly.
And that's where Reeves comes in at. So everything we were talking about when they were saying they were in works or in the talk of doing a Batman film as him as the director, it's true. He will direct the next Batman movie, which will still be titled, as we know for now, The Batman.
Yeah, the contract is written and done.
Yep, with Batman still starring the role of Batman. So everything so far seems to be good with this movie. Nothing too bad. I did hear Ben Affleck may not do any more films after he does Justice League and this film.
Yeah, but they say that all the time about different guys.
Right, but for right now, he's in there, and if this does go well, I'm pretty sure he'll stay on here. And as we said before, Reeves worked on Planet Apes, Cloverfield, and Let Me In. So he's definitely got some titles under his belt. I think this could be a good film. Still can't wait for this. And we got Slade Wilson in there, so you can't go too wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. And as it looks right now, that all the rumors that were saying that they were going with a brand new, or they wanted to rewrite the script again and do a brand new page one rewrite, or no. As of right now, it looks like the studio, the new director Reeves, Ben Affleck, everybody likes the script they have. They have a script ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a set director now. Now they just got to start. Looks like they'll be on track for this summer, I believe, is when they're supposed to go in front of cameras, aren't they?
Yep.
So we will have the Batman coming.
The sooner the better.
And we only have one more bit of actual news before we go into some of the bigger stories. And this one's just a little kind of a tweak in comic book news. Remember we mentioned that no one knows anything about it, but
yeah. This is a small story all we got was about, a sentence of this?
And yeah, a couple of names that was for it. But, and actually, it looks like Newsarama has killed this story or something. Because it's not, it's closed the site. But it was tweeted out, unless they changed something recently.
I still got my tab up if you want me to get this.
That's weird. Well, Newsarama had it reported, and we got to do some checking. Actually, I could check Twitter real quick. Tom King, the writer for the on Batman right now. Hang on. Let's see if Tom King still got it on his Twitter. But he had tweeted earlier today that he's actually writing the Batman Elmer Fudd crossover.
Yep. This is the tweet he pulled up. Said, did I mention that I'm currently writing an Elmer Fudd Batman noir? The noir thing that got me. Fudd, you seem like you took a long turn into Albuquerque.
Yeah, now he's got more stuff up on his Twitter feed now.
Oh, great.
It says, panel one, Fudd stunned. Fudd says, Bruce Wayne? Panel two, Fudd stands up angrily. Angry, then Fudd says Bruce Wayne as a statement. He's got some captions he's just put up. I'm reading this right off of his thing. It says, "We ate what we hunted." Caption two: in duck season we ate duck, in wabbit season we ate wabbit. In another caption, yeah. So it looks like it's because he's got. If you look at Tom King's Twitter, which actually I gotta follow him anyway. Let me click follow on him. He's got a lot of stuff he's putting up of the script that he's writing.
Yeah, I was wondering, is this all coming from his what's going to be in the actual book?
Well, this is his official Twitter. So, yeah, it says Yosemite's in one that he's writing. It says Yosemite, look, fellow, we got no varmint policy here at Porky's. Yosemite says also, and far as I know, bat ain't nothing but a varmint. Then to get into the bottom of that, it says I wonder if DC will object to my live tweeting a script.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. I'm like, these might be pulled down in a little bit.
Well, as of right now, he's writing the Elmer Fudd script, and he's doing it right now. So, that is awesome. So, we don't know anything else about any of the other characters, but we know the Elmer Fudd Batman noir piece is being done by Tom King.
Good.
To do it right, they should be doing a noir piece with Batman.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. Batman's definitely more of a noir. And he's a detective, so it's really easy to do that.
Exactly. So that's the end of our actual stories for this week, the news stories. But we have some Toy Fair coverage.
Yes.
So this one is all up your alley, my friend. Everybody knows you're our toy collector here.
Yes, and I still got to put those pictures of my toys in my closet on our Instagram page. Here we at. There we are. Okay, guys, so in our past Toy Fair, we got a whole bunch of new stuff. We got a lot of Statue 12 inches. We got a lot of animated series Batman toys. We got some DC Bombshells. We got more statues. And we got a lot of DC icons. And also the Batman Black and White will never, ever go bad. These things can keep going on for decades.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm flipping through the pictures on the first one you put up. And that Bombshells Harley riding a bomb looks amazing. It's the sixth
like
one.
Like I said, DC, oh my goodness. Well, right now I'm going to give you guys the film. And this is got Wonder Woman riding her horse. And this is a deluxe statue.
Yeah, these ones are based on the Wonder Woman movie coming up, the first three.
Yeah, I don't know the pricing on these, but they look awesome. They'll cost you a pretty penny, but these are all worth it. This captures Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman perfect. This is also her in her Themyscarian Amazonian armor. Then next, when you have her in her Wonder Woman armor with Steve Trevor. Oh, man, these things look good.
And it is Chris Pine, Steve Weber. Or, yeah, Steve Trevor.
Steve Trevor. You sound like Elmer Fudd there still.
Yeah. The next one we've seen, they already announced before.
Yeah, this one, we've seen this several times in the past. This is the Killing Joker with his camera in hand. But this isn't just him holding the camera in his face. This is the whole body with him and his top hat on and everything. This next one, I think I might buy this one. This is the one I could not stop staring at. This is your Batman Animated Series GCPD Rogues Gallery Action Figure 5-Pack. Comes with Renee Montoya, Bane, Killer Croc, Mr. Freeze, and Poison Ivy. So, this looks great. Although I didn't think Bane was in Arkham. I thought he was always in Blackgate, but you know.
Yeah, because Bane wasn't actually crazy.
No. So I was like, that's a little off, but I'll take the toy.
Well, you got to remember, the animated series really didn't use Blackgate at all. It was always Arkham.
Did they ever even mention Blackgate?
I don't think so. I think it was always Arkham.
I think it was. Oh, man. I got to rewatch. I feel like they did at some point, but I might be wrong. Next one, as Ken was saying, you got the DC Bombshells Harley riding a freaking bomb. You can't get no better than that. And she's got a skull drawn on the front of it.
And this one's the deluxe statues. Deluxe statues are usually 8 to 12 inches, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Next, you got your Batgirl figure. She's also from Bombshells. And then you got your Hot Girl Bombshell. You got your...
Mara looks cool.
Mara looks awesome. So does Katana. And this is another one I'm thinking about getting. This is the Batman Animated Series Batcave with the Batcomputer. And vintage Alfred figure.
Yeah, that one looks amazing.
This is the one I just kept seeing being popped up on my timeline on YouTube. They can't stop reviewing this guy. They're like, oh man, I gotta buy this.
So has anybody said a price on any of this stuff yet?
Maybe somewhere, but for the page we're on right now, no. And this is from DC Comics. Next, you get Harley on Harley's Day Out. Harley and the Hyenas. I don't remember the names of the Hyenas, but they're wrapped around her. And she's got her big hat on. Look just like she did from the animated series. It's perfect. And this is another statue that just gives me a glimpse on how awesome Jason Momoa looks as Aquaman. They really cannot get anyone better to play this role. You have the Justice League movie Aquaman statue. Probably the best one they have so far. Then the next one is the Flash statue.
I'm not sure. I don't like that Flash, the armor look for Flash.
Yeah, I see what people were talking about, but he looks like he does an Injustice, but I guess they heard the fans because in the new Injustice game, he goes back to wearing more of his... rubber suit, I guess you could spandex.
Yeah.
So they go even back to that in the game. So once they make this film, if they ever get to the second one, I doubt he'll be wearing this. This is just more like a prototype. As I said before, I'm going to mention this again. I feel like they're doing a little bit what they did with Iron Man and Spider-Man in the Avengers film or Captain America film. Iron Man helped him get a better feel for what actual costumes should look like, but this is the only thing he could make up. So till him and Bruce Wayne probably hook up.
Hopefully.
He's going to just stick with this. Next, you got the Cyborg statue.
Is it me or does the Cyborg feel almost like a Terminator exoskeleton or endoskeleton? Yeah.
And you know, had a little Easter egg in the Batman, Superman, Dawn of Justice film. His dad is the guy that played in Terminator T2. Yeah.
And it, so, like I said, and the way the legs look and stuff, it looks like the only
his hips, his
physical
arms,
part of the body
chest.
Is his head.
Yeah, that's about it. I like it. I'm loving this. Figure in the pictures.
Oh, I just got to look at the last statue on here, or number 18. Yeah. That one's going to be amazing once we get there.
I didn't think that I would like Cyborg's look as much, but seeing this toy more up front, is this guy's going to look at the film? Yeah, there's no problem.
Yeah.
Then you got, of course, your Batman statue. Not going to go over that one too much. This is the one that everybody says he looks like Owlman. But
yeah, he's got the shades
picture on.
Yeah,
and I've seen the picture on DC All Access, and it looks a lot better. So then next we have Superman. Not in a black suit, but in his classic red and blue.
That's right. And this is the straight Man of Steel costume. So
this one I marked out at because this is perfect. This is what got me into liking Superman as a child. You have your Doomsday Superman figure, DC Icons 28 Death of Superman action figures 2-pack.
This one looks amazing. I don't buy figures often. I may have to find this one.
Yeah. I don't know. I might. There's so many other ones I want, though. I don't know the price of none of these.
Yeah, but this one comes with the cape hanging on the pole, like, in the comic. This is a panel right out of the comic book.
Because this last one is the one. I know I said I'm going to have to get these other guys, but I'm saving my money to buy this. I've always wanted one.
I think this one's
one.
Already out. I think I've seen it at the store.
I'm going to have to go on Amazon then and buy this. This is your DC's gallery Bat-Signal prop replica.
Oh, okay. No, the other one was actually from the animated series collection. They have the one out that it's the Batmobile and the Bat-Signal.
Yeah,
they have it over Kenmore.
Yeah, he was trying to sell me that even when I went to Comic-Con, but I looked at that price and I'm like, Like I said, if I buy something like that, I'm going to have to finish the collection. I'm like, I just don't got the money for that. But this, I can get this Bat-Signal and just prop it up anywhere in the house. This could be our nightlight.
Yeah?
So, yeah, this is these are DC collectibles from the Toy Fair. They had a couple more for the statues, but I think I named most of those in here. They had the 12-inch statues of Wonder Woman, Flash, Aquaman, basically your whole Justice League. Then I named the DC bombshells. And I think that's about... Oh, here's the ones. The DC icons. Now, I did post this on our Instagram page. Not all of them were included. You have your Supergirl Rebirth, Robin Superboy. This is from Super Sons. Doomsday and Superman from the Death of Superman, which I mentioned. Nightwing Hush. And then you got your black and white statues of Batman, Harley Quinn, and several other Batman statues. Then the medium statues are Harley Quinn for red and white. Batman versus Harley Quinn battle statue, DC Covergirl's Death, and thought there was another one in here somewhere, but I don't see it here. This is the one I did post, and that was a Starfire bombshell with another one in there. So they had a lot of great things in here, and this is why I guess they won an award too from DC. And Ken's going to get a little bit more into this.
Well, actually, that gets into Mattel. Who makes the DC superhero girls, but makes all kinds of toys. Everybody knows Mattel. Mattel and Hasbro are pretty much the two biggest toy companies out there. But Mattel won the Action Figure Toy of the Year award from the Toy Industry Association's Toy of the Year award ceremony. But they gave Mattel the award. They won the Toy Industries Association's Toy of the Year award for the superhero girls action figure line assortment, which is awesome.
Looking at this,
look awesome. They're amazing. These figures I don't even think are out yet, are they?
No.
These are straight action figures, just like I remember when I was a kid, G.I. Joe and Transformers and the newer ones they have out. These are the regular, looks like 3 3/4-inch action figures.
And that's what made me so happy, exactly what you said when you were a kid. You were a boy growing up, and we had G.I. Joe, we had Batman, we had our superheroes, we had Power Rangers. But girls really didn't have any toys like that to play with if they wanted to be super. They had Barbie.
You wouldn't have remembered, but there was She-Ra.
Yeah.
Which was basically He-Man. The girls' version of He-Man.
Now, how well did that sell, though, back then?
Oh, that did fantastic. That did awesome. Okay. And I don't know why they didn't do more like that, but...
See, that's funny, because you would think they would if they saw females want to buy these, keep pumping it out. But I think they were trying, like, oh, that's a girl. Girls shouldn't play with boy toys. That's too close to action figure. Who cares?
Well... we have a couple of quotes here from about the winning the – and it says they won the award on votes based on toy retailers, media, TIA members, which is the Toy Industry Association, and consumers all voted on this, and they came up with these out of all the different action figures that are out there. This series won Best Toy of the Year. Now, it says, in partnership with Warner Brothers Consumer Products, it's an honor to be recognized by our peers and the Toy Industry Association, said Lori Pantel, Senior Vice President and General Manager of Girls Brands at Mattel. The DC Superhero Girls action figures have broken boundaries and inspire girls to be strong, brand, and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Then also, they say here, we're so proud of the DC Superhero Girls, and in partnership with Mattel, we've been able to bring the first ever action figures to girls and kids to expand their universe of imagination and play, says Pam Lifford, president of Warner Brothers Consumer Products. We're thrilled to see our groundbreaking franchise continue to break barriers and gain recognition for its mission and empowerment of girls, or empowerment for girls and fans around the world. There was a press release in here about the Superhero Girls action figure assortment. It says to inspire girls to push boundaries and reach their potential, Warner Brothers Consumer Products, DC Entertainment, and Mattel paired up to create a line of teenage DC comic book inspired female superheroes designed to save the day with this groundbreaking line. The line is not only filling a need in the marketplace by creating superhero characters for girls, but are also leading by delivering product or via a variety of categories, including first ever action figures, an exciting category to enter in the girl space. So, and it says that nominated products covered all aspects of the industry, and the ballot was overseen by the TOTY nominations committee. Oh, that's just the technical stuff. But yeah, they won it from the Toy Industry Association. Is the one who gave this out, the toy or action figure brand of the year. And you guys, if you ever go to a toy store, you see there's there's all kinds of action figure lines out there. And the first ever girls figure line won this year.
Yeah, I'm so happy about that. And I have my little cousins. It's her birthday today, actually. So whenever all this comes out, I might just still have to get her one. They got like most of the DC, Superhero Girls are toys that's out right now.
Oh yeah.
So and if they're buying this, and it's just having someone in your family knowing that's buying this, and that's why I'm not surprised they won this award.
Well, the other ones that they put out were probably what, close to 6-inch. They're about halfway mm-hmm. between a Barbie and a action figure.
And that's the ones they have, and they can.
That's
just
the ones
do
they had put out already. So this one is going to be an actual straight action figure line. So it looks like these are the standard 3 3/4 action figures.
And they play rough too. So it's just like I said, it's nice to see some little girls can get their hand on some action figures, and they can actually just go wild with it, do the same things their brothers or cousins are doing.
Well, yeah, what it is people, the industry is starting to slowly learn that girls are as rough on their toys as boys are.
Yep, they don't always want to play with Barbies.
That's right.
And we're seeing a lot of these females in movies right now, or at least female characters on TV, in movies. We're getting
movies
Gotham
and
Sire.
TV and everything.
Yeah, we got Supergirl, and they're putting them in the video games too. So they're everywhere. It's a good marketplace, and they found their niche. They can sell on these two females.
What it is the industries are starting to realize that there's as many girl geeks and comic fans and toy fans as there are boys.
Heck, if you walk into a Comic-Con, sometimes I think there's more females in there than there are men.
Oh, yeah. Well, it used to be back in the day that it was looked on that, well, if there's any girls there, they're there because the guy's, their boyfriend is there. That's not the way it is anymore.
Right.
That's not the way it was then, but now it's not looked on the same way because there's as many girls there because they want to be there.
Right.
So, and we're all for the female fans. That's awesome. And it's awesome to see that they're getting recognition for it now.
As long as we can get help to get all our comic book nerd, whatever you want to call it, for Comic-Con, our nerd culture. We don't care if you're a man or a woman. If you can get some popularity out there to give us more revenue so we can have more things to be excited about because we're a fan of it, we'll take it. We don't care what you are.
That's right. So, the last thing we got before we get to our comic reviews, we actually have a movie review this week.
Yes, we told you guys we were going to review this movie last week, and we were watching come back to you today, and we did. We finally got our hands on Justice League Dark.
And I liked the movie myself. I never read the Justice League Dark comic book, but I thought the movie was fun. Swamp Thing could have had a lot bigger role.
Yeah. Oh,
and
boy.
For me, Swamp Thing is still the character I saw in the Swamp Thing movie and TV series back in the 90s. I really haven't read or done much with Swamp Thing since then. I knew he was there and running around. All the newer stuff that I'm seeing where he's like Avatar of the Green and all that stuff, it's strange to me because I've not been following Swamp Thing.
I watched it with a couple of my friends. My one buddy, like you say, didn't know too much about it. The only thing he knows really about is Constantine. And in the movie – To be fair, they did Constantine great. I really thought they did great with Constantine.
I really like Zatanna and Deadman, too.
Yeah, they did great, too. The thing that got me, I'm going to break this down. I'm probably going to go on a little four-minute rant here, if you don't mind.
That's fine. This is our honest review of the movie.
Okay, so my personal feeling, so my buddy Ty, he could even see the points in there, and he's like, wait, what? Okay, Constantine was done really well. This was really his film, in my opinion. This was like Constantine being Batman, and that was the biggest problem I had with there. Batman, to me, shouldn't have been in the movie. He doesn't believe in magic. He's not a magic goer, and by the end of the movie, he still doesn't really believe in magic. He's like, this is happening, but I don't really think there's anything necessary where I would call it out of this world. And he's been best friends with Zatanna. They showed that in the film. He never knew Andrew Gannon like he did in the animated series. It wasn't a big problem. But I think Wonder Woman should have been the member of the Justice League to actually work with them. As we've seen in the Constantine Rebirth or issue number one when they did everything with Rebirth. Yeah. It was Wonder Woman and Shazam that went to Swamp Thing talking about everything that's happening because they know magic. They understand it. They know that the Justice League cannot handle all of this. Two members on the team.
I think the reason they put Batman in there is that's one character. They knew they could put Batman in there and he would be basically a character out of his element. Batman always seems like he's comfortable in any situation. He's ready to go. But this is a character who he believes magic exists. It's just, he has no use for it. So he's supposed to represent us in this story, that we have no control of magic or anything else.
See, I felt Constantine represented us more because he was the human and he still has no powers, and they portrayed that real well.
No, he was actually casting spells and stuff, though.
No, he was using objects though to do so when he was.
So, he but didn't he was have, using like, magic antenna. Even though he had none of his own.
Right, and that's what they said they were trying to show. Like, if you had dark magic, they were trying to show you with red or purple. Zatanna, if you're being good using magic, you're going to have white or some type of blue. Constantine had like a yellow-orange aura around him because he doesn't actually have any magic power. He uses other things to use magic.
Exactly.
Batman being in there, and I feel like they kind of just put him in there as a cash grab, honestly.
Because he was us because he's just a normal man in this magical world. So he's just along for the ride to basically, for our point of view, give the normal everyday man's point of view. Because Constantine, like I said, he is just a normal man, but he's using magic. He fully understands the magic world. He's a part of this world, even if he doesn't have magic himself.
Yeah.
So that's why Batman's in there. If you put in Wonder Woman or Shazam or any of the other ones, they actually deal with magic all the time also. So they really couldn't be a good representation for us.
Right. But like I said, being a magic movie, I don't know. Just being a Justice League Dark fan, you don't need to have someone that doesn't really know. But I guess since a lot of people don't know about Justice League Dark, Batman was a good character put in there if you don't know about him. And when I say crash grab, I'm not dissing anything. It's just a lot of people don't know Justice League Dark. If they see Batman, they're like, hey, Batman's in here. Let's go watch and it can be more interesting, which is fine.
Well, also, what I look at it is this movie is one that – because they're trying to keep everything in a continuity right now, that's why they're still stuck in the New 52. Because this is in continuity with the rest of the movies they've done.
Right.
I think Justice League War is the first one that started, that they actually started an animated world. And everything since then has been in the same world.
Yeah, before they're just giving you an animated film.
Exactly.
You know, not connected, just here's a film.
Batman is one of the characters, like I said, everybody knows, everybody's ready to go. And if you look in the DC universe, who's the one that usually puts the teams together? Justice League. Batman puts it together, gives them a base, and sets it up. JLA that they just started, the new Justice League of America. Batman already had the base ready for him. He pulls the team together and says, okay, now you're working as a team, and guides them until they get started. In Young Justice, who put together the Young Justice team?
Batman.
So now that they're putting together a Justice League Dark, it makes sense for Batman to be the guy that does it, who actually brings the characters together and shows them how to work together and says, okay, now move on.
And I might be going a little hard on that, but I don't know. I just felt like they should have had still just another magic character from Justice League in there.
Being the first movie in a magical world, they could do more movies now and start bringing other characters into it.
Hopefully. I'd like to see a Dr. Fate in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Inspector. But the other two problems I had, because it wasn't a lot, it was just really these main three things I had. I didn't hate the movie, but to me, from the hype they were showing, this is the part that kind of bothered me. I thought they were going to show more of him, or more both of them, in the film done correctly. Me, personally, I felt like Etrigan was too much like a Bruce Banner Hulk. from my memory, kinda. He never really hated he didn't hate Etrigan. He didn't hate really when he became Etrigan. It was a burn he had, but he accepted the fact that Etrigan can save people. So the fact he didn't want to really show Etrigan at first was like, wait a minute, I thought you use him. Why are you hiding him? Then when he went in and tried to steal some stuff, it just felt wrong with Etrigan. They changed up his origin a little bit. Then Swamp Thing, they did not put Swamp Thing in there. He was not done correctly. He was in there for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, Swamp Thing basically dies off. And no one cared about it. Not one person. It's just like, okay, he died.
For one part of the plot that he had to do something, and other than that, he was gone.
Yeah, and then when he did something, he died. And no grieving from Constantine, no grieving from Zatanna, not Deadman. Oh, by the way, Deadman was done perfect. I don't know. I can't remember the guy at voiced him. I knew he played in The Longest Yard. That's all I really know about that actor. Deadman probably was my favorite character out of the whole movie. Yeah. They used him exactly how Deadman should be portrayed. But yeah, Swamp Thing to me, they kind of was a letdown because he died at the end of the movie. They didn't really put him in there for too long. And when he did die, they didn't really care about him. They even buried Jason Blood. They buried him, and Etrigan said he was like a brother. I thought that was pretty sentimental. I liked that part, and they can always get Etrigan back now if they want without him. He was talking to Ryan like he should. That was great. But,
I thought the character of Etrigan felt right.
Yeah, the character of Etrigan was done right. I didn't like how they killed him off, and he didn't want to use him at the certain times he should have been used. And then Swamp Thing dying. I don't know why. And even if they did kill Swamp Thing, make him a little bit more important. I mean, this guy is the protector of the green. He's basically an
honestly. I don't know if he actually died or not. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that.
See, that's the problem. I don't know. They just showed him getting his body pulled out, and he was crying, and he fell to the ground, and that was it. There was nothing else. Like, did he die? Yeah. If he did, why aren't they mourning him? If he didn't die, they could have showed him slithering back into some type of crack in the grass. Something. They just left it blank. It's like they forgot about to put that other part in the movie, and that lost some points to me. That was just very choppy. It's like they tried to make an extended cut for themselves, and like, oh, you gotta buy another extended cut, but this is the actual DVD, so what happened?
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, even, was it Orchid? The Spirit of the House.
Okay, yes. I don't remember the actual name of it, but yes, the Spirit of the House of Mystery.
She was in the new Justice League Dark. She was a newer character than even the writer, so they never really had an origin story for her. So they could have done anything with her. I didn't mind that. And if they want to make her the Spirit of the House, that's fine.
And it's great how Deadman was hitting on her, and they were kind of coming onto each other. He was going to have a relationship with the Spirit of the House.
And it's funny because Constantine, like, oh, yeah, you don't know what you're doing. You haven't talked to a female in how long? He's like, man, I've been dead for so long. I don't know. but really, you get him, Zatanna, Orchid, and Deadman all back in the house. And it seems like they're going to have a pretty happy ending. And we might get Constantine to join the Justice League. Zatanna is joining the Justice League. Deadman probably will because he can go anywhere. And she might convince Constantine to do so. The thing is that, as I said, Swamp Thing may be brought back. We might get to see that in another movie. And the way they left Etrigan, he can come back just as Etrigan. Yes. He doesn't need Jason. My other thing, now, fans out there, if you're listening, this is one character I don't know too much about, but I was pretty sure Dr. Destiny could only be used in your dreams. I don't think he can actually be shown.
I don't know.
I don't know. So that's why when I seen him like that, I was like, wait a minute, does he have this much power? If it's not in somebody's mind, I'm really not for sure. What's he capable of? Is he getting the real world?
Well, the fun thing was that Felix Faust was supposed to be the villain the whole time. Oh. And then they find out they beat Felix Faust, and he has nothing to do with anything. They just happened to find his house, and that was where they fought him.
I did like Felix Faust because he was campy, he was quirky, but that's what Felix Faust was. And the first time I saw him, it was in Galactic Guardians, the Super Friends.
Yeah.
So it felt like Felix Faust. And he was very, very, very powerful in here. I didn't know he could do that much damage because when I see him in Justice League Dark or Justice League Unlimited in the Justice League series, he had magic powers, but he wasn't that overpowered. And here he was just like casting spells at all of them, and no one could do anything until Zatanna unleashed all of her power. So I like that. And I also did like how Constantine. Now, this is the human side I really enjoy, where I say we don't need Batman. Constantine was enough, at least to me. He was the only one that knows how to control actual magic when it gets out of hand, and he doesn't even have the magic powers to begin with. He just knows how to use it. Same as Batman. He's the only member of the Justice League that doesn't actually have any powers, but he can somehow do almost anything. And that's why I felt Constantine was enough for the human side for us that represented us. It's just showing once you have willpower, you don't need to actually have powers, because if you have that much will, you can do anything. And that's why Zatanna is still trying to pick up pointers from him to how to control her magic. She still doesn't understand how he's able to do that. So Constantine was probably... I can see why he was the leader of the team and why he should be leader of the team. He's basically their Batman.
Exactly.
And director even said that. He said Constantine is supposed to be our Batman for this film. And when I looked at both of them, they are very similar.
But like I said, if they use this as a stepping stone to do another Justice League Dark or do something else in this Dark universe, they could do it without Batman or anybody else now with Constantine leading the team.
Yeah. If he is going to still lead the team, is there really a Justice League Dark now with everything that happened in this film?
I don't know. Well, I know Deadman's still in the House of Mystery. Zatanna's leaving to go to the regular Justice League, but there's plenty of other characters. Edrigan's still out there. There's plenty of other characters in this realm. Like you talked about, Dr. Fate, Spectre, all these guys could be brought in.
Yeah. And as we said, we might get to see Swamp Thing. I don't know. I guess to me, Swamp Thing without Constantine or Constantine without Swamp Thing, if they're going to do a magic pairing, it's just weird. Just doesn't feel like... That's like having a Batman with no Robin. Or no Alfred or something. It feels like you're missing something.
I don't think it's the last we're going to see a Swamp Thing.
Hopefully not. That might be why they didn't really explain, because they're going to wait till another movie to do so.
Yeah. Well, the movie... I thought one thing, the voice sounded kind of cool.
Oh, as much as I've been going off on there, everybody... Their voice work was amazing. Everyone. Yeah. And Matt Ryan coming back as Swamp Thing, coming back as Constantine was awesome. He is the new Constantine, and he should stay Constantine for everything.
Well, yeah, I think he's going to be Constantine as long as he wants to be Constantine.
Mm-hmm. To me, he's picking up like what Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill did with their characters.
Exactly. You see, those guys are still coming back now, 25 years later.
Yeah, 20-plus years, they're still doing the character. And Matt Ryan, he's perfect for Constantine. I like the Zatanna voice. Swamp Thing's voice was awesome. Etrigan, as I said, they did him perfect because he was talking in rhyme that whole time. And Deadman's voice, he was your comical relief.
Exactly.
And he can't really die either because he's already dead.
Yeah, he's already dead. So
he was doing like anything he wanted in that movie, and it made perfect sense.
And why? The cool thing was they actually gave the in part of this, you actually got the Deadman origin story too.
Yeah, you did. You got Deadman origin. You got a
I think that's the only one that they gave us an actual origin. Yeah, they gave us Etrigan also, because the other characters at this point I think they realized that Zatanna's a popular enough character that people know who she is.
Right, and when they just
through
show
Justice
her doing
League,
her magic
some other
show.
Ones that we've seen where she comes from.
Yeah, and once you've seen her do her magic show, that kind of gave you what she's all about.
Exactly. Constantine, with the TV show and everything they've done, people know who Constantine is. It's not like when the first Constantine movie came out with Keanu Reeves. A lot of people did not realize that was a comic book movie.
Right. And movies like that came back out in the day of superhero films, like even the Swamp Thing film, that was more of Swamp Thing than what Constantine was in his film, but it was still not 100% of what we saw in the comic books, but the fact that you put the movie out there gave us a great stepping stone to introduce these characters again later on in life.
You know what's going to be interesting? Are they going to move, or when they do the Constantine series on the CW Seed, we know that's going to be in the same universe as the original Constantine TV series, but are they going to pull anything from this maybe?
They could. They could definitely. Well, what I was trying to figure out was they probably won't do it from here. I think they're going to do it from the Constantine show, because you got to think about it. It's on the Seed with Vixen. Vixen is connected to the Arrowverse, and so is Constantine now. So I don't think they're going to pull it from the new films that they got going on. They're going to pull it from the show and literally just make it animated.
Well, that, and we also
might
know that
see some cameos from Arrow, even.
Well, I believe the Constantine film is being done by Berlanti and Kreisberg and all those guys.
Wait, Constantine film?
No, I'm sorry, the Constantine series, the new one.
I got so excited.
No. I would not put that out of the realm of possibility eventually, because they're still running around rumors that they're still trying to work on a Justice League Dark movie.
Yeah. Now, if they do that, I would like Matt Ryan to come back, but since he's already doing the TV shows and the animated films, I doubt they're going to have him come back for an actual live-action film. But as I said, this is a stepping stone into showing you can use the Justice League Dark characters. As I said, and most people enjoy the movie. you have Zatanna. You can put her in there now. Swamp Thing's been introduced. Ectrogen's been introduced. He's, used, as I say, using his rhyme. A lot of people that I've shown him in the other series of Justice League Unlimited didn't know he spoke in rhyme. So in this, they know him doing that now. Deadman's being reintroduced. So as I said, give us a good stepping stone. Whenever a form of media gets out, you can always do it later on down the line.
Exactly. So now that we've done a review of the show, what do you think of the what kind of a grade would you give this movie?
I would give it a solid C plus.
Okay. Now did that change at all since we started talking about this?
Yeah, it went to a plus.
I would have to give it myself, because I don't know Justice League Dark, all the characters felt right except for Swamp Thing, because there wasn't enough of him there. Myself, I would probably give this a good B plus A minus.
And this is just, well, I guess not just me, this is other fans too. As I said, one reason why I'm not giving the best, highest stars for this is because it's still based in the New 52 verse.
Yeah.
Everybody knows New 52 was probably one of the darkest times DC ever had. So, as I said, because of that, I still don't really know why they're focusing on that realm of the DC comics. I think they could have done it a little different. Although we did get a little bit of a switch up in this film. You did get to see the John Stewart Green Lantern on the team. You got to see Martian Manhunter in the background of the team. So
well,
having a couple
thing,
characters.
Did you catch when John Stewart was saying why he was there?
Hal, what was up with Hal?
He was filling in for Hal Jordan because Hal Jordan was off planet doing something. So he was just a fill-in. He actually isn't part of the team normally. And this one, Hal Jordan is still part of the Justice League, but he's off planet or something. So, what's his name? John was just holding the spot.
And I wonder, what is Hal doing? I feel like that's going to be another play-up they got for a film down
the
line.
It's possible. It could be anything.
Or it could just be, hey, he's busy, you know, Justice League stuff.
Yeah.
So,
I think it was a way to keep John Stewart in the mind of people who are actually watching movies and stuff.
Right.
Because you're going to have him in the new Green Lanterns movie coming up, the Green Lantern Corps movie.
That's a good point. That's a very and he's going to be in a new video game too as a DLC skin. So
exactly. So, but that's our review. Yeah. I think, it, like I said, if you add the two together, we got a solid B minus.
Yeah, we do. And like I said, I don't hate the movie. It just was one of those things of you could. I know you could have did better, and you know I had really high hopes for it. But all in all, as I said, the voice acting was solid, the art design was solid, everything was solid, and even as you said, the Swamp Thing. Is probably the main key for both of us. But besides that, the movie was still good.
Yeah. It's interesting that they put Swamp Thing on the cover and showed everybody that Swamp Thing's in this movie for a whole 5 minutes he's in there.
Yeah. You know what? If they wouldn't have put him on the cover, honestly, I probably would give this movie a B. Because, you know, to me it was like false advertisement. You're like, hey, here's a character, not really. But you're going to see the movie because he's on the cover.
That's right.
If they wouldn't have put him on the cover and he would have been on, like, the back, I would have said, huh. I wonder why. And then I watch. I'm like, okay. Well, you didn't promise me something that didn't happen. And here, I feel like you promised me something that I didn't get. So that was what the letdown really was for me.
So, but we can move on from there. We got our movie review. Now we get to the comic reviews for this week. This is for February 15th, 2017. We got three books we picked out. We got a new Rebirth, a regular number one, and then we got we put in here also Green Lanterns number 17, which is a part two of the Green Lanterns in Gotham.
Yeah, and that has some solid stuff in there with the Green Lanterns progressing without certain things.
Exactly.
We'll get into that.
We also got some new mythology about how the yellow fear light energy is used, because the Scarecrow figures out an interesting way to use the fear without having a ring.
Yeah, and I was really confused on how is he doing this. Well,
explain it a little bit, but it's still a little weird.
Yeah, it was done a little weird.
So you start off the whole book of the Scarecrow explaining what fear is. You're in his head the whole time, how fear does this, fear does that, and how as the Scarecrow, he basically just about worships fear.
Yeah, that's
for him,
all
it's
he
irresistible.
Can think about
that's, fear. He's addicted to fear. He wants to be scared.
Yeah. But since he's been doing this for so long with these toxins, he can't really feel fear anymore. He's lost that feeling, and now he feels empty.
Exactly. So he's trying to find everything he can. He's trying to scare everybody else so that he can feel the fear again. And I didn't know on here, it says that he actually has had a yellow ring twice and lost it.
And this is what really is powering up his machine. That's what I thought in the Blackest Night he had the ring. I didn't know he had it twice. But I knew he had the ring. And this is what really powers up his machine. He tinkered with it. Of course, him being a scientist, if he gets something this powerful, he's going to want to duplicate it later on in life. He thinks ahead. So he made a machine where it draws all the power and energy from the fear ring of the Sinestro Corps, and now he's using it to his will.
And he can project it across into videos that he puts out on the internet.
And that's what it really did, because he's showing these videos of Batman not really terrorizing, but he's frightening people because he's this man dressed in a bat suit. It's going to be scary, even though he's taking out criminals. What if that's you he's taking down? Mm-hmm. And they're showing how bad Batman can get. He's a vigilante. He's doing damage. He's putting this thought in people's mind, implanting that Batman shows fear. And fear is what draws the Sinestro Corps. So this is how he's able to manipulate people like Alfred, as we get in the next page.
Exactly. We pick up where we dropped the last issue, with Alfred actually has Simon's gun pointed at Simon, talking about, nobody stops me. I have to kill the Batman.
And that's when
you can see the yellow energy in his eyes. He's been hypnotized by the video or something. So,
and then Batman, he grabs the gun before it goes off in Simon's head, and he starts to say this quote right here: "Be thine own place or the world's thy jail." And as Jessica said, I felt the same way. By thy what? What does that even mean? It's a poem that him and I guess Alfred know about, and it will trigger a phrase to break him free from any mind control.
Basically a post-hypnotic suggestion that they had placed in Alfred's mind long ago, so that if he's ever put under hypnosis, Bruce could say this phrase and it would break the hypnosis.
That's why I love Batman and Alfred. They got such a bond. They're prepared for everything. And if you guys remember, in the last issue, Simon and Batman were arguing about the gun issue. So the fact that he had his own gun pointed at him from a butler, Simon kind of feels a little stupid.
Mm-hmm. And he said the worst thing is that Batman didn't say anything at all about it. He's like, it's worse when he says nothing at all.
Yep. That reminds me of a father. You ever know you messed up somewhere and your dad doesn't even tell you anything? He just doesn't say anything.
You're ready for him to let you have it. And he's gonna, you know, as soon as he gets home, he's going to let you have it and everything else. He just kind of walks in, looks at you, and gives you that look, and then moves
and
on.
Like,
then you're like, dude, you're still waiting for that shoe to drop no matter what.
And that's the other problem, too. That whole night and that whole day, you're just like, wait a minute, is it going to happen now? So you can't just let your guard down. You're like,
exactly,
ready for it.
And all of a sudden, you become the greatest kid he's ever had for the next week, because you're waiting. You know it's coming.
Yeah. So they get back to Gotham, and this is when Simon's just like, man, he's not saying nothing. He's like, you know what? I'll confess. All right, I carry a gun. I know I'm afraid. I know I'm not, maybe not be good enough, and I don't trust this ring. But what's the big deal? Is that what you want to hear? I'm afraid, all right? I'm afraid.
And he's not saying anything. Batman's not saying anything as he's doing all this.
Yeah.
He's way inside of Simon's head, and he hasn't done anything to do it.
Nope. And then this is when Jessica's just looking like, oh no, are they going to get into it? Then Batman finally speaks up and says, you're not afraid that the ring won't work. You're afraid you're not good enough. And he's right. That's why Simon still carries that gun.
He says straight up, you'll never know until you actually force yourself to trust the ring.
Right. And this is when Jessica's ring starts going off, letting them know the fear and danger is involved. So they go to where it's located. And
the funny thing
is,
if you look, the first time her ring goes off, it starts going off in Spanish for some reason.
I know. I was looking at that, too. I was like, wait a minute. Her and her ring are becoming one. And Simon's like, why are you and your ring so friendly with each other? She believes in her will.
Exactly. Well, she talks to the ring.
By the way, I want to say, when Alfred later on didn't mention this, Alfred was tied up by one of Jessica's constructs. She's beginning to make more of these each issue of Green Lanterns. She's becoming more and more in tune with her willpower.
Yes.
But they get to this office, and all these people are under Sinestro, Scarecrow's new Sinestro Corps ring.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of cubicles with computer monitors, and people are tied to chairs.
Mm-hmm, just watching the video of Batman. So when he gets there, they're like, oh no, it's the Batman. He's going to hurt us. And then you see Scarecrow come out with his scythe, which is perfect. He always needs that scythe. He's like, yes, the bat's here. I knew you'd come. Now I'm going to kill you. So the fear is just taking over everyone, except really for Batman. Batman's kind of numb to this, and he uses fear too. So the Green Lanterns are being controlled by this, and it's Simon that looks and says, if I take one step closer, maybe my whole body will seize into tremors, and I can feel all the fear is coursing through my veins. I'm seeing my family. I'm afraid of the future and the ring. It's failed me before. It might do it again.
But then his willpower starts to increase.
Well, no, it says insufficient willpower to start with. Like, all of a sudden, his ring's like, wait a minute. You don't have enough willpower to control this. Then he's like, oh, no, it's failing me. I'm in trouble. He starts to pull his gun out.
Yep, and then that's when Batman tells him, what are you going to do? Kill us all? What are you doing pulling out your gun? You don't need that gun. The gun and Simon's thing, the only thing that can save me right now is the gun. The ring is only as powerful as its bearer.
Well, Batman tells him straight up, yells at him, use the ring, not the gun.
Yeah. And that's when Simon says, the ring is only as strong as the one who holds it, and I'm listening to my fear. The ring will only fail if I fail. I cannot listen to the fear. He's going to have to listen to his will.
Then he says, I overcome the fear. I am the Green Lantern. Drop the gun and pulls the ring and smashes computers.
Like he drops this giant metal fist on all the computers and just smashes the computer that was controlling the Sinestro fear from Scarecrow. And he yells out, I am a Green Lantern. So Simon finally overcomes his fear of the ring failing him, as he found out, and as Batman was telling him, the ring only fails you because you failed the ring. You have to have the willpower. You don't need a gun. As I said, Hal made his frickin' ring out of pure willpower. No one gave it to him. So if your will's strong enough, it can do anything. But, of course, they beat Scarecrow. Jessica ties him up once again with her construct. Simon
and
picks up the gun.
Scarecrow's like, no, I'm losing. I can't feel the fear anymore. No one's scared anymore.
Oh, yeah. So there he goes. He's once again numb inside. And then you get them saving everybody, untying them. Simon looks and picks up the gun. Next, you get them on GCPD.
Well, hang on. Before we get that, you get the people. Batman's untying these people, and they're still kind of afraid. They're like, hey, it's Batman. Wait, no. And then the one girl asks him, Batman, are you going to hurt us? Because they've been watching these videos about the Batman hurting people and being scary.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm actually here to help you, always.
Yep. And hearing those videos, it reminded me of Batman versus Superman when Batman just going around branding people. It's like, yeah, you can be pretty brutal and pretty scary sometimes. I can see why random people that you're there to protect can still be afraid of you. You're not Superman. You're not the Flash. So now they got Scarecrow and he's going back to Arkham, presumably. And this is where Commissioner Gordon tells the two Green Lanterns. He's like, Lanterns of Gotham, officially, I'm going to thank you for helping me. But now, get the hell out of my city with those rings. They're weird. So then that Simon's like, well, we don't get no key to the city. And him and Batman start to talk. Batman finally has found his best Green Lantern. He still thinks Hal is a pompous jerk. So that's not going to work. But he said, Simon, you're the one Green Lantern ring bearer that I can actually work with. You listen to me. You overcame the fear. You're a valuable member of the Justice League. I like you. I would like to work with you again. So if I ever give you a call, you better answer.
Yeah. And that's you get to the scene where Simon finally pulls the gun and looks at it and says, you know what?
My page got stuck together.
Ah. Okay, well, he pulls the gun and turns it around and starts to hand it to Batman and says, you know what? It's time to give this up. I'm a Green Lantern. My strength is my willpower. And he starts to hand a gun towards Batman. And Batman says, apology accepted, but I don't want that. So,
Gordon goes,
well, wait, kid, I'll take that for you. And then that's when Batman says, actually, Lantern, a word. He talks about it. It says, at some point, I'm going to call on you and you're going to answer.
Yep. And that's when Simon's like, I don't know if I should be honored or terrified with that. And he says, wait, nothing. He just flies off. Batman always leaves you mid-sentence. Now Jessica gets a call or a warning from Remy about them having they need him to come back immediately. But if we remember right, Bal-Hum is taking over Remy's body. So
exactly.
Whatever happens now is not going to be in control of him. It's the guy they've been fighting for a couple of the past issues. And we're going to find that all out in the next Larry issue.
So this was actually a good one. We got an advancement on some of the mythology behind the Yellow Lanterns a little bit. Because the Scarecrow was able to use the yellow light without a ring.
And
then
we also
Simon finally trusting the ring fully.
And he gave up his gun. I'm like, yes. Because I think that was something when New 50 came out, people were like, wait, why does he have a gun? He's a Green Lantern. That's like Flash having a sword. It's like, wait a minute, you just don't need that.
Yeah.
So, finally we got to see that. It took him a couple years, but
He doesn't need to carry no more. He found that out. He has the willpower to do anything he wants.
So Lanterns is actually doing – I like this book, even though they're the only two Lanterns in it.
And I didn't think I was going to really – I didn't know how I was going to feel. I'm not saying I didn't think I was going to like it. I just didn't know what was going to happen with Rebirth. But when we were buying all those first issues of Rebirth, after seeing the partnership him and Jessica had, I couldn't help but keep buying it. And I like the – I love the Green Lanterns in general. So these are another good addition to it.
So the next one we actually have is our one Rebirth title for this week. We have Batwoman Rebirth number one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny, it's just one. I thought Super Sons was a Rebirth, but it's not.
No. Well, it's in the Rebirth universe, but it's a brand new title. Right. That's why. All the Rebirth, all the ones with the Rebirth brand on it that is actually a Rebirth special is a retelling of the – basically start restarting the book series. Batwoman has had her own title, so she gets a Rebirth.
And I guess with the Super Sons, this is something new, so they didn't need to make another Rebirth. That makes sense.
So Batwoman Rebirth number one, and actually most of this book is a story or a telling of the origin of Batwoman and where she's at and where she's going to from here.
So it's kind of felt like it's kind of felt like Wonder Woman's Rebirth a little bit too. It's like we're going back in her past before we get to her future.
So we go back, we see some just flashbacks of one scene at a time of her at age 9, age 20, age 23, age 27, and then soon to the future. And then we get a flashback to her and her mother and her twin sister.
I forgot she had a car sister
in Brussels at age 12, and they show a car wreck, and her mom's basically been taken. Her mom, her sister, and her were taken by someone, people in black masks. They show she's under a hood. She's hearing things back and forth, scratchy. She can't breathe. Who sent you all this stuff back and forth? And then the hood starts to come off a little bit. She heard gunfire, and then the hood starts to come off a little bit. It says, Lieutenant Kane, she's here. And then you see her mother tied to a chair with gunshot, dead. She's being carried out by soldiers, and it looks like her sister's dead also. Mm-hmm. She's the only one that survived.
Yeah, and that's why she says, don't worry, your daddy's got you. Because that's all she's got left that she know of right now.
We move on to West Point at age 20, and she's fighting in the gym, sparring with a girl back and forth, and showing that they're kind of hitting on each other a little bit, talking about how she's the toughest cadet in West Point and all this stuff. You move forward to age 22 in Monaco, and it looks like she's actually been, she's already been thrown out of the army. And they give a little bit of, they don't tell you exactly what it is, but it says, an accusation has been brought against you, cadet, in a flashback to the army, a violation of Article 125 of the Uniform Military Code of Justice. So
I wonder what that's exactly for.
I don't know. This looks like she's probably, in her mid-30s at this point, right now?
Mm-hmm.
So this may have been back before it was allowed to be gay in the army.
That's what I thought they were.
That looks like
at
what they're actually talking about.
That's what it seems like. And then she's getting drunk, kind of like you can tell her words are slurring. She's kind of like drinking away her pain after all this happened. But once she got kicked out of the military, and she can't be a person she really liked because of the way she is. So why not drink a little bit? You're on a yacht.
But she talks back and forth and says, "Tell me this is a misunderstanding and all this stuff. And it's never going to happen again." And then she quotes another one. It says, "No cadet shall not lie, cheat, or steal, or suffer others to do so." He says, "I'm sorry, I can't tell you this is a misunderstanding. I can't because I'm gay."
Yeah.
Then we go to the island of Coriana, 80 miles off the coast of Malta, at age 23, and she's it says the lost year.
The lost. Mm-hmm.
And she's she wakes up in the middle of the night, pulls a gun out of the nightstand, and slides out.
I'm loving the haircut too she's got.
Yeah. And this other lady that she's with stops her from the gun and says, no, I'm just walking through here. If it was this is my island. If someone was going to break in here, it would have been someone I sent in. If assassin's going to be here, I would have sent them. Then it says Gotham after the fall at age 23. And
there's somebody also. There is somebody in the window spying on them, by the way.
Exactly. But this is showing a party in Gotham, and they show that her actually meeting Renee Montoya.
Mm-hmm.
So this is she talks about she kept moving from one addiction to another and showing that Renee was one of her addictions. It says you trade one self-destruction for another until someone, something sobers you up. And then you see Batman in the alleyway with her. It looks like she was being robbed or something.
It's Batman.
Huh?
He'll get you back on the right track.
Exactly. Then you can tell from there she was inspired by Batman saving her, and she starts training. And starts training herself to become Batwoman. So we move on, and then they just show little clips. Here we go, as we go, and then they show Batwoman from the newer Detective Comics with the whole team with her.
Mm-hmm.
And then we finally move on to now. Which it doesn't say how long it's been until now, but it says as of now. And Gotham, aftermath of the Monster Men, and Batman gives her a request and tells her straight up, the Monster Venom has arrived on the black market outside of Gotham. It'll be put up for auction in a matter of days. Do you understand what you need to do, Batwoman? And here he's sending her to stop the Monster Venom from getting out. So yep. Then you get just flashbacks to different people that have talked to her. Where are you going, soldier? Are you leaving? Or where are you going? It's all basically the same thing, asking her, what do you plan on doing? And then the final page says, soon. So this is the future. It says, Commander Kane, we are approaching Gotham. Your orders. And it looks like she's leading the colony. And she says, open fire.
Yeah. And I don't know what really is going to happen here. And I just wanted to point out somewhere in her flashback, I think that's her sister that came back.
When?
She looks like, do you see the one where it's like this, like a female Joker?
Hang on. Let me get to that one.
I think. I'm not for sure. I didn't get really.
Were you talking about Beth?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know much of the backstory of Batwoman.
I'm gonna look this up. Because she had like a greenish hair and white skin. I'm like, maybe that's her version of the Joker since she's Batwoman.
It's possible. But the one thing that this comic does give you that most of the comics have not is we actually get a splash page of four small panels of previews of stuff coming up.
Yeah, we got a little preview here.
So you get one of her fighting another someone named Tahani on the top of a building, and it says, we were friends, Kate. This is business. You get another one of her, like, scared or something. It says, bats are all alike, or you bats are all alike. You think fear is a symbol, but I can show you that fear is a sacrament. So that could be working against Scarecrow or something. I don't know.
Possibly.
Then you get another one of her laying, a woman laying on top of her, and it says, did you miss me, Kate? And then another one that is white skin and blood coming off a lip or something. It says, wake up, sister. Our storybook must come to an end. So that may be her sister.
I'm trying to find this on here. Let me see if they'll tell me. Maggie. Oh, and Maggie Sawyer was in here too, by the way.
Yeah.
This book, Kate. Let's see, Kate. No. I don't know. I'm looking for her. I don't see her. Huh. That's weird.
Well, we'll have to investigate that and come back.
Yeah. We got looked up. I'm very curious about that. There's no Beth actually. They're showing that was in the book. At least they don't know yet either.
So. But we have one more book to review this week, and that is we actually finally got Super Sons number one. And this is something that was teased all the way back in the original Rebirth special.
This is my favorite book of this week.
Oh, yeah, this one was great. And it starts off with a prologue that's kind of confusing where it's coming from. But it's five people sitting around a living room, and one kid, people are just doing everything for him. He's he asked for some popcorn from his brother or someone there, and the dude's like, okay, take the whole bowl, that's fine. He says, Mom, my feet are cold, so she brings a blanket to cover him up. Then he tells Sarah I could use another pillow. She's like, puffy or flat? Puffy one, please. So she brings and puffs a pillow for him. She asks Dad if he could borrow the car, and he says, tomorrow's fine. Would you like me to take it to the car wash first? Then he says, how about a group hug? Then he screams, how about a group hug? But then it shows it looks like they're on the set of a TV show or something. It says, we're the closest family ever. It looks like they're on set of a TV series or something, so I'm not sure what's going on with that. But we move on from there to now. And we have Jonathan Kent and Damian Wayne, Superboy and Robin, fighting. Or in a fight. And Superboy tells him straight
with
up.
Robin on his back.
Yeah, he's like, what kind of trouble did you get us into? He's like, I gave you all the information that was important for this situation. Everything you knew full well what we were getting into. And Jonathan's like, what are you talking about? You lied to me. He says, not true. I simply didn't tell you everything, which is Damian to a T. And here they're being hunted down by, looks like, robots of Superboy and Robin. So, Damian says it's time for Superboy and Robin to take a stand. Robin and Superboy to take a stand. And John's just wait a minute.
Why your name first?
Yeah, well, I'm older.
I'm taller.
Shut up. So these guys are great. But then we get 2 days earlier, and you have Hamilton County and Jonathan going to school, pulls up, some old guy is driving the school bus. He's like, hey, where's the guy? Where's the normal driver? Well, he's out sick. I'm filling in. So, okay, he goes in, and they show him, Jonathan sitting with Kathy on the school bus, and a couple of bullies are picking on a kid in front of him. He stands up and says, hey, guys, stop that. And they start shooting spit wads at him. And the bus driver tells him, hey, sit down. No more messing around. So they get to school, and the bullies are throwing snowballs and started a snowball fight. Except they start putting rocks in
there. This is the end of the day, too.
Yeah. And they start putting rocks in their snowballs.
Being just mean. That's not even being a bully no more. Exactly. He's trying to hurt somebody.
Well, they crack open one of Jonathan's friend's heads, and he's like, oh, that's it. I'm done. He starts to make a big snowball with a big rock. He starts to get upset, and his eyes start to glow. Then out of nowhere, the bullies get this giant snowball lands on top of them. Okay, like, was like, where did that come from?
An angel in the sky.
Exactly. He looks up, and that old guy that was driving the school bus is on top of the building. And
then he goes to the dark
John
alley.
John says, wait a minute, I know what's going on here. Because it's a short, old guy. He goes around the back of the building, and he finds out, yeah, it's Damian Wayne in a disguise.
Of course. His boy is the world's greatest detective, so you know he's got to get the disguise on from somebody.
So he's been tailing and following Jonathan, pretending to be his teachers and all these things, just so he can see what Jonathan's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out, then you go back to Gotham City and Wayne Manor, and you find out why Damian's here. Well, Bruce was heading out to be Batman, and Damian's like, finally, I get to go too. And Batman's like, no, you're not going anywhere. He says, you blew off your home study session, and Alfred said you're behind on your homework assignments. He says, and Damian's like, I don't need that. I know everything already.
Of course he does.
So he's like, no, you,
you're basically
grounded because you broke your word. You said you were going to do your studies, and you didn't do it.
Yep, and he's like, you're being unreasonable, father. And he says, well, I kept my word with taking care of you, and then did you keep your word of taking your own studies? He says, no, but you said you would, right? Yes, then keep it. And he drives off.
Which is totally different. You find, then you go back to the Kent farm, and you have Lois and Clark and Jonathan sitting playing cards, and they talk to him about, they heard what happened at school, how he was standing up against the bullies and said, dude, that's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. This is great. We're proud of you.
Yeah. And then, and they just give him all the confidence, letting him know you don't need an S on your chest to be super.
Exactly. And then Superman gets called off, so he takes off. Jonathan goes to bed.
Probably same stuff that Batman went to go for, too.
Probably. Jonathan goes to bed, and then Damian's in his room, making fun of him because he went to bed early.
Saying that's for kids.
Yeah. Bedtimes are for kids. Damian talks him into going with him because he has something, he needs his help. And they got to go check out this LexCorp building in Metropolis. So they start, they get to the building, start climbing up the building. In the last scene, all of a sudden, someone says, as they're climbing up the building, it says, someone behind them says, horrible weather for breaking and entering. Remember, this is a LexCorp building they're climbing up to try to break into.
And before you go too much further, did the scene when they're jumping across the buildings with the lightning, didn't that remind you something from The Dark Knight
Returns? Yeah, possibly.
It just felt like a little oaf to that. But yeah, there's a guy flying behind them with his own red cape.
Exactly.
And this is a LexCorp building. You want to tell him who it was?
It's Lex Luthor in his power armor, and his Superman power armor, telling him, can I help you boys with something? And that's the end of issue number one.
And the next issue will be titled Lex.
Exactly. So they get to talk to Lex Luthor in the next issue.
Which is interesting, because this is the first time I didn't think I would ever see the Super Sons involved with Lex Luthor, at least being Superman Lex Luthor, or whatever you want to call him, Super Lex. So we'll see how this goes. I feel like he's going to help them, which is going to probably infuriate both Batman and Superman.
So, but that brings us to the end of our reviews for the week.
I love this issue. This was very interesting. I told mom she's going to have to read this one.
This is going to be an awesome series just because the interaction between Jonathan and Damian. Because think Batman and Superman are cool because they're opposites and stuff, but Damian's so far, even farther beyond where Batman is.
The creators of this said, the best way to describe them, you have Damian in a kid's body trying to be an adult, and you have Superboy in a kid's body being a kid with extraordinary powers.
Exactly.
He's really trying to fit in and be normal. Damian, on the other hand, sees this super kid, and he's kind of a little bit of overcompensating. The way he was raised, he's trying to act like an adult, even though he's not. So it's basically the grass is greener on the other side.
And we are starting to slowly see Jonathan get more powers, because if you in Superman this week, it was Superman number, let me look it up.
17?
Yeah, Superman 17. Yeah, Superman 17. It was mostly a Jonathan story. But you see he actually slowly started to develop a little bit of X-ray vision in that one.
And that's how he said in here when he was, he asked Damian in this book, do you want to hop on my back and I can just, you know, jump us across these buildings. He's like, there's no way I would get on your scrawny shoulders. And plus, you don't even know how to fly yet. I'm surprised. He's like, well, I haven't learned that ability yet. It hasn't developed into me.
Exactly. It's coming, but he hasn't got it yet. He can jump really far. He can run really fast, and he's strong, but that's it at the moment.
Because he is still technically a kid. It's Damian throwing his weight around because he's a teenager now. You know, he's a little more mature. Jonathan's still trying to mature with these Kryptonian powers.
So there is
great interaction. I think I like the interaction between their sons better than I do Batman, Superman. You can tell they're more on a friend level with them. You're like, oh my goodness, these little kids. It's better. I don't know. I just like the super sons interaction better than I do actual Batman, Superman.
Yeah. So it's gonna be fun to see that develop. But
no, definitely.
Next thing we got one more thing to go. And as you hear there, it is time for our weekly trip to the comic shop. The comic shop is sponsored by and brought to you by the Shazbots. That's their song, The Comic Shop. Check them out on iTunes and Facebook. Let them know DC Superpower sent you. And check them out also if you go to the Shazbots.com. You can hear all of their, most of their music you can hear off of there. And they actually have some videos. They did a TV series last summer. So the first book we actually have for this week, we only have 9 books for this week. And we have Superman number 18. And this is Superman Reborn Part 1. In DC Universe Rebirth number 1, the enigmatic Mr. Oz told this Superman, "You and your family are not what you believe you are, and neither was the fallen Superman." Now in the first Rebirth crossover between Superman and Action Comics, the shocking truth behind Oz's words is revealed. It begins with one of Oz's prisoners escaping, and ends in a tragic moment for Lois and Superman. Now, it says here also, the covers of Patrick Gleason and Mick Gray and the variant covers by Gary Frank for Superman number 18 and 19 and action numbers 975 and 976 all connect to form a single vertical image, which I know gets it for you.
Yeah. I'm getting it. Yeah.
The art is go ahead.
I was going to say, everything dealing here with Oz and everything that's unrevealed that we might find out about who he is, which I'm thinking it might be a certain somebody from another comic book series.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting this. And well, I still have to read the Action comic book that came out the week after so I can finish out and figure out who is Kent. And this might have something more to do with Oz.
Mm-hmm. Well, the art is done by Mick Gray and Patrick Gleason. And it's written by Patrick Gleason and Peter J. Tomasi. Now, the prisoner that escapes, I think I know who that's going to be. Because we know Tim Drake is coming back. And we know
that's what I was thinking
Mr.
Too.
Oz picked him up as a prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking in Superman here is where Tim Drake's going to escape.
Which is interesting. Won't be in a Batman comic.
And I'd be very happy that Tim Drake is back.
Same here. We love Tim Drake. Dude's the best Robin. Still saying that. I watched a video before we started recording. And he's like, yep, Tim Drake's still the best Robin.
Mm-hmm.
Next we have Aquaman issue number 18, Warhead finale. Aquaman's battle with Warhead leaves him trapped in a tortured mind of a telepathic beast, where the Sea King is forced to experience the lifetime of combat that defines his tragic new foe. Art done by Wayne Fetcher and Scott Easton, and written by Dan Abnett.
Okay. Next up, we get Batman number 18, I Am Bane Part 3. Bane broke the bat before, but it wasn't enough. Now he's going to break everyone else. Bane is coming and no one is safe. Art is done by Danny Mickey and David Finch, and it's written by Tom King.
There we go. Next one on our list, we have Lord of the Rats Part 1.
This is Cyborg number 10 to start with.
Yep, Cyborg issue number 10, Lord of Rats Part 1. Cyborg's gone to ground following the crippling malfunction of the tech of his hands at the corporation of Star Labs. Desperate to find his prey and a techno villain poisoning as Victor Stone's father conspires the Lord of the Rats, a Detroit crime lord who agrees to hunt down Cyborg, exchange for the OTAC, transforming his rodent drug distribution, force him into the cybernetic rat army. That all sounds really weird to be in a cyborg comic book.
Yeah.
Written by Will Conard and John Steamer Jr.
Okay. Next up, we have Green Arrow number 18, Reunion Part 1. Ah, this is the one you were talking about with Roy coming back.
Yeah, this is one I was looking up. This looks really, really good.
Well, Oliver Queen and Roy Harper once patrolled the streets as Green Arrow and Speedy, but a massive falling out left them estranged for years. Now learn the truth behind the tragic disillusion and triumphant reunion of one of comics' most iconic super duos as Green Arrow and Arsenal join forces once more. Art is done by Eleanor Carlini and is written by Benjamin Percy.
Sweet. And this next one, now we're going to get our answer about Vahoom. Green Lantern's issue number 18, the last testament of the First Lantern. Before the Green Lantern Corps, the Guardians of the Universe embedded a power battery inside of a man, and burning him with the power of unimaginable power. Eventually, fearing him, they stole the power back for their own control. But now Vahoom, the First Lantern, has returned with a plan to force Jessica and Simon to help them regain what he has lost, godhood. Art done by Jay Listrin, Robinson Rucka, and written by Sam Humphries.
Okay.
I wonder how long this is actually going to go on with this, because this dude seems pretty powerful. I didn't think Vahoom was ever going to come back. And I wonder now also, will we get a little bit of help from a Phantom Lantern?
I don't know.
Possibly.
That'd be interesting to see if actually the Phantom Lantern starts working with him on this one.
Yeah, because he has the fear and the rage and the greed, which seem to be the only real bad parts of being a Lantern. There are a lot of good ones out there, too.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
Well, next up, we go to the what's one of the funniest books I have every time that it's out. We have Harley Quinn number 5.
Yeah, you love this book.
This has been a lot better than I ever expected it to be. Red Meat Part 2. Harley's managed to carve out a kind of peace in New York's corrupt mayor. But once she gets wind of his plans for the city's homeless population, the deal is most definitely off. Art done by John Timms and Joseph Michael Linzer and Carrie Evans, and is written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor.
Nice. Yeah, you, as you said today at work, you always have fun with Harley Quinn. And like I said,
yeah,
from what I even read, it's just... It's so off and goofy with Harley's mindset. You can't hate on that comic book. It's just a fun book.
Yeah, if you're in a bad mood, you read Harley because it'll help.
Definitely, definitely. Interesting. Okay, next is Justice League issue number 16, Timeless Part 2. Scattered across time, the individual members of the Justice League must fight their way back to the present from an ancient past and a distant future to stop the Timeless from erasing the Earth's greatest heroes from history itself. Art done by Matt Ryan, Fernando Passarian, and written by Brian Hitch. We didn't cover the first book this week, guys, but there was a little mention of the Legion of Superheroes, and I thought that was pretty cool because maybe this might tie in what's going on with Saturn Girl.
It's possible, because we know that the Saturn Girl story is going to be happening in Supergirl also.
Right.
They mentioned that during Justice League versus Suicide Squad.
And I really think this is going to pick up on there. They might say, hey, we're missing a teammate, and she's somewhere trapped. I don't know all what's going to happen, but I really think somewhere in there is going to get a good little tie-in. So I've been picking back up Justice League just so I can figure out what's going to happen here, pick up Supergirl, because I really need to find out what's happening with the Legion.
Mm-hmm. Well, the last book we have for the week is Nightwing number 6. Hate is coming to Bloodhaven, and it will tear Nightwing's world apart. Try and keep up as Dick spans the globe to piece together clues and uncover the mystery of who wants Nightwing dead. Art done by Javier Fernandez, and it's written by Tim Seeley. And that finishes our books for the week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good week.
It was. We had good TV shows, we had good news, we had good figures, and we also watched a film. By the way, we still need to get out to see the Batman movie. Turns out, a Batman Lego movie is the best number one film in the country, so.
That's right. That one's been killing it in theaters. So hopefully this week we'll get a chance to get out there, and then we'll give you a review of the Batman movie, the Lego Batman movie.
It's nice we're getting these movies out there. We got other stuff to talk about.
Yeah. So, but it's been a good week.
Yeah, it's
There's some awesome stuff coming in the toys and collectibles for this year.
And I didn't mention this, but we also got some more rumors about the Injustice game, too. But since they're just rumors, we don't know who's coming out yet. I didn't want to say nothing. But the game is very promising. We got a little bit of a more detail in the comic book as well. Supergirl is going to be a very important part.
Oh, yeah. And we're getting a lot closer to the release of that game.
Yes, we are. Can't wait. They're starting up their book series very soon to release.
So, but with that, why don't you let everybody know where they can find us?
Everybody can find us on our Twitter at Superpowers DC, and for our Twitter, I'm sorry, not for Twitter, for our Instagram and our Facebook, you can find us at DC Superpowers Podcast. For my personal use, you can find me on Instagram, Hollin' at Wolf, Facebook, Burn Mac Wayne Moore, and on Twitter, Yell.
Awesome, and you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at GW1Ken. On Facebook, I'm just Ken Rose. You can also find us as parts of the Tangent Bound Network and the Weaving Geeks Network. And also, you can find us on iTunes. Another thing you can do over on iTunes is you can leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think of the show. We need your feedback so we can see what we want to do. Another thing we're doing is I did a Twitter poll and I only got 5 results from it. But we need you guys go to Facebook, go to Twitter, go to Instagram, send us an email at DCSuperpowersPodcast@gmail.com. Let us know. We're considering possibly broadcasting live while we record this on Thursday nights.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something you would listen to, because it would be free for you, all you gotta do is you tune in to Mixlr.com, find us, and we're and you listen. There's a live chat room running during it that we can watch while it's going, and you listen to the show. You get the live version instead of the edited version that we put out. So if it's something you're interested in or that you want actually would like to see from us, send us an email. Let us know. Hey, I would love to listen to that. So, but other than that, Vernon, do you have anything else?
Nope, that's it. As I said, we hopefully get to watch the Lego Batman film, and we'll get back to you guys on that. That's my main priority right now is go see the number one movie.
Awesome. Well, Vernon, we'll see you next week. And Super Friends, we'll see you next week.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.